Why is this cover smaller? Oh, the smaller
you think I'm doing? Yo, sorry, cut that in.
No, that's fine. We are going to see a passing one in the same.
God.
Yeah, yeah. Abaya, abaya, get that.
Yeah. I think that's your name.
Hey, think that's okay.
Good morning, everybody. It is possible that we could have financial assist and support the both of us. Thank you very much. Good morning, and sorry for starting late. There's no one else to blame except me for the late start. Was looking at the problem and the document because I only arrived last night from the mission of parliament. I was part of the delegation that was led by the deputy speaker involving a group of chairpersons to discuss with the parliament in China on how to provide oversight on the MOUs that have been signed. And we only came back last night, and it wasn't possible for me to go through the document. I only had to do that this morning. Thank you very much, and I hope you will accept my apology. the purpose of this meeting is to look at how the funds that were secured by PRASPA or were made available to PRASPA by our government, and PRASPA is a state-owned enterprise, to begin to address the challenges that the country is facing in terms of railway. Then PRASPA is going to present to us the strategic approach. And as they are presenting, members would at the same time be reflecting on two important documents, the 2003 Public Transport Survey Report, which highlights the challenges, so that we are then able to link the strategy that is being presented here to what was identified in that survey. The second information that you would reflect on is the study tour of the portfolio committee to China, which happened last year in July. And there is a report on that, so that we can then begin to see whether there is a common understanding of issues between the portfolio committee as well as CRASA, and also to look at how level is the playing field in terms of legislation as well as in terms of our institutional arrangement as well as our financial capacity as a country and the skills level. The third information that we'll be reflecting on is the strategic plan of the Department of Transport, which we participated on, and also the strategic plan that was then held by the portfolio committee both last year and this year. Because during those strategic plans, there was an issue that was raised very sharply by Brussels. And the CEO of Brussels would even say, I'm raising a red flag. And then there is another red flag that was raised by the state president of the country. Job, job, job. And there was another red flag that was raised by the minister for economic development, to say. When you raise those flags, I'm also raising this of those parts. So we'll also be using that information to reflect on it and see how what is being presented to us speaks to this other information that we have. And lastly, we will use our own observation of what is happening on the ground and what is the public saying to us, so that we can then begin to link our strategic approach to the public and demonstrate that we are also listening to them, and also look at how what we do in terms of this service delivery relates to community development, so that at the end of the day, we are not talking service delivery in isolation to community development that would result with social development and economic development at household level, not economic growth that does not have impact on poverty reduction. Begin to link the infrastructural development, the service delivery, to the improvement of the social life and the economic standards of the community that we are serving as members of parliament. And if we then find that there are gaps, it will then give us an opportunity to say which areas of improvement we need to highlight and how possible it is to make those improvements in time for us not to waste time and resources. I think that if we approach our engagement in that fashion, we will then move as us, the team, not us and them. Focus mainly on the relevance of the strategy to all the issues that are highlighted in different pieces of information and reports. And bear in mind that today we are not dealing with audit reports and how PRASA spends money. We are dealing with the strategic approach and how it relates to social and economic development and what improvements we need to effect and what role we then play to ensure that we speed up the process. I will then take this opportunity to welcome PRASA and thank you for responding to our call. And I hope in your presentation and also in your responses, you will not say that you are not aware of a report on public transport survey. Because we sometimes get worried when we read the media and we find some of the CEOs claiming not to be aware of information that is related to projects that they are leading. Because it then tells OTA there is a need for us to facilitate a situation where there is no piece of information that is ignored in moving forward. I'm saying this in reference to what was in the media. Sandral saying they are not aware of a report that and the advice that was given to them in relation to the tolling of the roads in Gauteng, which causes a very, very serious problem if they would not be aware of that information. And also, I still have to hear from them as to whether they were also not aware of the 2003 survey report. I hope you will demonstrate your broad understanding as proper of changes that this country wants to set. Thank you, Mr. Montana. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. Good morning and greetings. Chairperson, I think I'll be the last person to say that I'm not aware of even the National Travel Survey. I was a DDG in the Department of Transport at the time of its completion. And in fact, I think that it highlights what the major issue is in terms of access to transport, not only for the urban areas, but also for the rural areas. And I think for the past 2 weeks that I spent in this committee, I think that the message has been very clear. Greater access for the rural and the urban poor, and that rail transport plays quite a major role in terms of that. And I think that the message is very clear. Chairperson, the past 2 years, I think we came here, indeed, you're correct, Chairperson, that we raised a red flag and say that rail is, passenger railways in particular, is in trouble. Metro Rail, Sosholozamel, the long distance operator, were not able to meet the needs of the country, the needs of the economy. But today I want to sing a different tune, Chairperson. I want to say today we are not here to recognize the problems and the challenges of our railway system, but we are here for the first time to unveil our recapitalization of our rail system, starting today, of course, with Metro Rail, Commuter Rail fleet in the country. This is a plan that, of course, we have been outlined in great detail. We are doing so after a feasibility study. So we are here to tell the committee and to report that we've got a bold plan to turn around our railways. Chairperson, the fleet renewal program, the acquisition of new trains for Metro Rail in particular, presents quite a major opportunity for us as a country, because it's not only about transport. I think that it's about the issues that the Chairperson has correctly outlined. They need the opportunity to revitalize our rail industry in the country, to create jobs, to train a new generation of railway workers in the form of engineers, artisans, but most importantly, Chairperson, to move beyond the limits of the old system. Because I think if you look at it, the rail system, as we talk about it today, we've got a lot of lines that have been closed, but we've also got a lot of lines that are operating in the major metropolitan area. So you see it, you go to Bloemfontein, you go to Limpopo, you go to the Eastern Cape, you find a lot of lines that are quiet. So today we want to talk about the first phase of that. I know that we're coming back next week, Chairperson, to talk about in particular the socio-economic benefits of this program in terms of training, in terms of jobs, in terms of broad-based black economic empowerment and all of those things. So today I'll talk on the first phase and outlining the details of the recapitalization. Thank you, Chair. I'll of course start with the challenges of our railway system. It is very important to remind ourselves of where we are in terms of that. I'll deal with the outcome of the feasibility study on the new rolling stock program. And most importantly, I'll talk about the benefits of the rolling stock renewal program, and I'll talk about the next steps, particularly the timelines and the procurement process that we're dealing with. Chairperson, let's start with the challenges. What is the problem with our railway system as it stands? I know that I'm speaking for passenger railways, but some of the issues I'm raising here are relevant for the freight rail as well. But I won't talk much about that. I think Transnet is dealing with that. But I'm aware of what is being done in that area. So I'm raising these issues in the passenger rail environment, well aware of what is happening also in the freight rail environment. And I think when we discuss railways, I know that all over the country people are raising concerns. In the written public statements, both at the level of the presidency, the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Transport, they've all explained how our railway system, both freight and passenger, is holding back on our development. I think that we need to ask the fundamental question, what is the problem with our rail system? And is there a shortcut to addressing this, to fix those problems? The first issue, Chair, that we must recognize with the current railway system is that the infrastructure and the technology has really reached the end of its design life. Which means we can no longer refurbish, we can no longer upgrade. The country has reached a point where we have to replace the railway system. South Africa is today paying the price for over three decades of underinvestment in its railway system. So the technology that we have today, the infrastructure, can no longer take the country to the next level about the new growth path, about the new path of development. We had the old system where you're taking your goods to the ports and you are relying on a cheap African migrant labor system. That railway system was structured in that way. The technology, as I said in previous presentations, we missed a number of revolutions in railways, and that's what we are. So the technology that we have in the infrastructure has come to the end. So what we are doing as PRASA in particular is just to manage it, to buy time, to try and manage and limit the breakdowns and everything. But the system as it is right now is no longer the system to take South Africa to its next challenge. And I think that I want to put that to the committee so that you understand the challenge. It is not a problem of mismanagement. It's not the problem that we have a system that is no longer able to cope with the demands that people have, the demands for rail services, as well as the demands of the economy. Related to that, Chair, with the infrastructure that has come and technology that is at the end of its life, is the fact that we've got poor levels of reliability and predictability. The chances of a train leaving a station or a depot not making it, breaking down in the course of that is 100%. I think, Chair, I must emphasize that issue. When a train leaves the depot, the chances of it not making it to its next destination, because the levels of reliability has so much deteriorated. And that relates, of course, to the predictability of our trains. It means by predictability, I mean if you've got the timetable, the chances of the train being on the timetable, not making it, not arriving, is actually very high. We've got people who go to the stations today waiting for a train that doesn't arrive. So the levels of reliability and predictability has so much deteriorated over the years. Thirdly, Chair, and this relates to the annual report that we presented, is a high cost of maintenance of the old system. The older the system becomes, and if it takes about 30, 40 years as we have in our country, the cost of maintaining that system is very high, Chair. Now, but here's the anomaly, Chairperson, when we discuss the problems of our railways. In many countries, they do accept that the cost of their railways are very high. But what we take comfort in is the fact that railways contribute to an efficient transport system. The anomaly in our own environment is that the cost keeps on going high, but the contribution of our railways to the economy is going down. Which means even if the cost of railways were very high, but the benefits to the economy, to the transport system as a whole, to the efficiency of the transport system was better, then there wouldn't be an issue. But the costs are going high, but the ability for it to respond to the demand and the needs of South Africans is going the opposite direction. So the cost of maintaining the system can no longer be justified. It means, therefore, that we have reached a point where instead of paying high cost of maintaining an old system, we basically have to move and recapitalize and the whole system. So it doesn't contribute to an efficient transport system. Because when you look at the rail system, particularly on the passenger and the freight side, if you look at the high volumes of passengers, if you also deal with high volume cargo or heavy cargo, it's supposed to be on the rail system. But unfortunately, the rail system is not able to cope with that. And of course, it is unable to support sustainable economic development, because the cost of the rail system is high, and the cost of transport keeps on increasing, but without you getting the benefits of that. Most importantly, Chairperson, is the fact that it facilitates limited access to socio-economic opportunities for the rural and the urban poor. I think that we see a lot of people who cannot get access. The National Travel Survey tells us that people find, for example, the next station or the next bus stop far from them. So the rail system as it is currently structured, it ends at the edges of the townships and many townships, and it doesn't even reach in many. And even in the townships, it's not inside the townships. It's on the edge of those townships. So that's what we have. So in a nutshell, when we say from a systematic point of view, from the way the system has been designed, the skills that drives it and the technology that underpins it, those have come to the end. They belong to the 1950s. And Chair, I said that when I raised the red flag that nothing is going to change this unless if we take a bold plan to turn that around. Now, I'm talking about the design of this system. But let's also look at the structure of the system as a business. And you'll see that this relates, Chairperson, to the annual report that we also presented. Is the current railway currently structured, the passenger railway system, under the current conditions viable? And so I want to argue that and present to the committee that in its current form, our railway system can never be able to generate the necessary resources to even recapitalize itself. The first issue is the long distances that we have. Now for commuter rail, we know that it is not a good thing to have the kind of long distances. Internationally, people travel for far lower distances for commuting purposes, which means from home to work, from home to school, from home to town. They travel on average for 9 to 10 kilometers a day. In our own environment, we have people traveling on average around 30 kilometers. And by that, if you break it down, you look in people who commute from Moloto, they do it for over 120 kilometers a day. You go to Vereeniging, 40 kilometers. So it means these are long distances, which I think that will not make the system work. Secondly, is the low densities. Railways internationally that are working, they rely on high densities, large numbers of people on the system. Ours is a low density system, with people staying because of the history of apartheid, people staying far from places of work. And so we run a system that cannot pay itself, that cannot generate the resources, because the people live far from places of work. But most importantly, we run a railway system that only is using primarily by low income, people who earn on average 2,500. And now when I talk about 2,500 as an average person, it's actually misleading. If we break it down, we talk about the unemployed people. We talk about people who work 3 days a week. We talk about construction workers. We talk about workers in the manufacturing sector. We talk about workers in the retail sector. These are the customers of Metro Rail today. They earn between 800 and 1,200 a month. In many countries, of course, I know the Cape is a bit of an exception, because you do have a significant number of professionals. In fact, it's a mixed system as it is. But throughout the country, in general, it is a system that relies. So you can't place the burden of changing that system on poor households, because it's not their choice that they live far from the cities, mm-hmm. And you can't then say that you want them to pay. If we were to apply the user pay principle, we'll actually finish the current railway system. Because it means, therefore, that the poor people cannot even afford it, but most importantly, we'll be locking out quite a lot of people, because there are people who do not have an alternative. So, say, I'm summarizing it in two ways. I'm saying the problem with our railways is that it has come to the end of its life, but secondly, because of the history of apartheid, it's quite difficult for you to have a system that is viable in economic terms with the high cost of the system. What is the Prasa strategy? What is our response for that? We are focusing mainly on three areas, Jefferson. The first one, as Prasa, we've got to deliver on our legal mandate, which means whether the trains are old or not, we have to keep them running in line with what the Legal Succession Act requires us to do. And that's what we are trying. It's not an easy job. It's very difficult. Commuters up there, they'll tell you that the levels of reliability of the trains are ungood. So, but we have to make sure that we keep as many of these trains running and fulfill the legal mandate that is there. So basically, they were trying to ensure that operationally the system keeps on working. Secondly, we are trying to unlock the value of the assets. I think that if you look at Prasa, it has got over 18 billion rands worth of assets. These are historical values on the assets, and if you use them properly, you could get quite a lot of value on that. We've got lots of properties, stations, land, and those should be used to make sure that we support the railway system and the way it is funded moving forward. But most importantly, we are talking about investment in new technology, in new infrastructure, so that we can have new capacity to meet the future of the country. And that's where we are buying this modern technology as part of increasing that capacity. Now, Chair, I want to say that we are, as I said at the beginning, that we are implementing a bold plan. And this is not a plan about the future. This is what we are now currently doing. That Prasa is implementing a bold plan to transform and modernize passenger railways. All in all, this plan involves investment of 136 billion rands in the period ahead, and I'll deal with the numbers as we proceed. But the total investment in our railways over the next 20 years would be in the order of 136 billion rands, as it were. And you could see, Chair, that we are shifting away from refurbishment. Our main issue now is the replacement of the technology and the stock. We spent a lot of money on the refurbishment in the past 3 years. Prata spent about 25 billion rand between 2007 to 2010. But you see that we refurbished. We upgraded, but we never created new additional capacity. The 4,665 coaches we had, most of those were outside of service 3 years ago. We fixed most of those as part of the 25 billion rand program. We brought them back into service. But we were not creating, we were maintaining the existing with the 25 billion rand. We never created anything new to make sure that it takes the country forward. Now we've reached a point in the aftermath of the 2010 World Cup where we recognize that this system can never be taken forward in its current form, that we need to embark on a replacement strategy, both on the rolling stock as well as on the infrastructure side. And so I want to say that we will have elements of a modern railway system in South Africa from 2014, 2015 onwards. And so, but what do you mean by that? We mean, therefore, that we'll start to have the new modern fleet coming in, we'll have new depots, we'll have a modern signaling and train control system, we'll have modern stations, we'll have an integrated ticketing system, we'll have telecommunications, we'll have proper signage, and we'll have speed gates, as it were. This is what we are investing in, so that by 2014, South Africa has a proper. Unfortunately, Chair, there's no shortcut. Let me report briefly that I had a meeting with COSAT yesterday here in the Western Cape, and they were saying to us, workers are having problems. And I said to COSATU, we agree there is a big problem. But we've got two options. We can get the trains, the lead times for making up a train is 2 to 3 years. But if you want us to take a shortcut, we can go and buy the trains in China or in Germany. But if we buy them in China and Germany, let's also accept that we're not going to build the factories and the plants here in our country. We're not going to create the jobs. We're not going to train people. So there's a shortcut for that. Or alternatively, that we must accept that we're going to have a lead time of 3 years. We're going to insist that the trains are built in South Africa, that we are going to build our own engineers here, and that we have an industry that supports the economy. But the price for that is, of course, 3 years, which means, therefore, that between now and 2014, we're not going to have the trains. It's a major trade-off. What underpins the plan that we are presenting today is that we are going to have the trains and modern railway system from 2014 onwards, because we have to prepare the plants, the factories, and make sure that we've got the right kind of industrial capacity for the long term, and not take only a short term thing about bringing trains. Because it's easy, we can buy the trains. They can be refurbished, they can be built in Durban in the UK. We just bring them and assemble them in South Africa. It could be a short-term plan. But I would urge the committee and even government that we don't take a short-term view. When you buy a train, you use that train for a minimum of 36 years to about 45 years. So 3 years is not a long time to wait. Yes, we know that there are problems. We must deal with those problems on a daily basis. But the investment program must have maximum benefits for the South African economy, for the commuter, as well as for local development. So by 2014, we are saying that the key elements of a modern railway system where we replace the old infrastructure will be in place. And I'm not saying we're going to start in 2014, so I must emphasize that. The 20-year program doesn't start in 20 years. It starts now. But the last train, of course, will be delivered in 20 years. But I'll explain the details as I proceed. Chair, what do you mean by 2014? We've identified that as Prasa or passenger rail will be able to have high quality services in the following corridors by 2014. Mm-hmm. So these are the corridors that will get the first train, the signaling system, and all the things that I mentioned in the previous slide. Mabopane Jemisten Johannesburg, Naledi Johannesburg, Lerala Jemisten, Umlazi Durban Kwamashu, Bridge City Durban, Pretoria Johannesburg, Khayelitsha Cape Town, Kapstein Trap Cape Town, Mdantani East London. These are the corridors that by 2015, because there are massive numbers of our own people who move, they're high volume corridors. We need to make sure that these are people who experience a change on the existing system in the quality of service and the reliability thereof. I haven't spoken about the new services. I'm just talking about existing corridors where we need to make sure that this investment has got a major impact. So, Chair, I want to put it and say that these corridors will see the highest levels of investment and changes in the next 3 years. What are the problems with the current rolling stock? I spoke about more general about the railway system, but today we are discussing more specifically the rolling stock. And Chair, why we are putting emphasis on the rolling stock? Because it is a catalyst for the changes in the rolling stock. It means it is the first major step in the transformation and modernization of our railway system. So it is not the only, but it is at the heart, it is at the forefront. If you look in Prasa, the main business, 80% of our business is in Metro Rail, which means therefore that if you want to get Prasa to work, you must solve the problems and challenges facing Metro Rail on a daily basis. If you look at the current rolling stock, Chair, and that's what I was trying to define, but I'm getting into details. Investment in rolling stock had been on declining trend for over 3 decades. We've never invested. The last trains, new trains that were only purchased in 1986. These are the silver trains that we have between Khayelitsha and Cape Town today. Mm-hmm. Only 8 train sets. We call them the 8Ms, built on Japanese technology. Those are the small numbers of trains. But all the other trains that you see, they're driven by design and technology that dates back to 1956. The technology, so it's not only old, but it is inherently obsolete, which means therefore that sometimes we even struggle to find parts and components for the kind of technology that we run. The average age of the current fleet is 38 years. And again, when I use average, I know it's misleading because you bring the total number and you divide it. When you break down and show slides, you'll see that some of our own trains are over 50 years of age. So it means they can no longer do the job that they're trying to do. If you look at that slide, it summarizes the age profile of your fleet. As you can see that in the first bar, 16 to 20 years, we've got only small numbers of trains. This is what we're talking about. That these are the trains, if you look at the purple bar, the small one, they're on 16 to 20 years. Those are the only trains that we have that you can say that they're reliable. The rest of the trains you can see down the other side of town, 46, 41, 45, 46, 50. And Chair, let me report that if I've spoken in the past, I've presented to the committee in the past, that if you look at the 46, 50, those actually are the coaches that we should actually be retiring in 3 years or 4 years' time. So if we do not do that, we are going to have a big, big problem. The 46, 50 years trains are the trains that can no longer be run, nor can Prasa actually refurbish them or upgrade them. It's uneconomical for us to continue to refurbish those except to replace them. However, if we do not replace them, we don't implement the replacement strategy now, it means, of course, that we're going to have a major problem in about 4 years' time. And you can see that they are far bigger. That graph of 46-50 is far higher than those on 21, 25 years. So you are running a system that is really very old. So this slide summarizes the age profile of that fleet. So this is a comparison of the modern trains, the contemporary EMU compared to the Metro Rail. So the red side, most of the side is Metro Rail, and the green side is a modern train, HAL train, or what is it called, trains that you find all over the world. You can see that when you look at the criterion or the factors, from safety to speed to video surveillance to automatic train protection to efficient power electronics to passenger convenience to doors, everything, Metro Rail trains fail in all respects, except one, on heating.
On heating.
Can you see the green on that side?
Mm.
Yeah. And I'll tell you that sometimes you don't even switch those heaters on in winter. That's the only thing that meet the modern standard. The rest do not meet a modern standard. So they fail in all indicators, which confirms that the current fleet cannot support the modern economy as it is. Now, these are some of the consequences of delays and train cancellations. When you have a system that is not reliable, that is a train that is broken down, It can't move anywhere else. People then jump off, others jump off, others jump on, depending on what options they've got. That's what we are talking about on a daily basis. That is a level of safety. If you talk about safety, that's what we have. The rail safety regulator says to me, once you've got 180 people inside that coach, as per the design of these trains, close the doors. I'm not sure if it's possible. We might as well not run the system as it is, because other than Dubai M7Z, they can't wait for the next train, which is not even guaranteed that it will arrive. And of course, when these construction workers, because when they get to Park Station in the morning, there's a truck waiting for them. They earn every day 40 rand. If the train doesn't arrive, they miss that truck. That truck doesn't wait for anyone. It actually takes the next person, who unemployed person, onto that truck. So if they can't get it into there, that's the result, because they don't have an option. They get so frustrated. Because for them, it's a question of life and death. It means that you've denied a family the opportunity to earn money to put bread on their table. That's what you have. Those are some of the consequences. So those are the problems that I was summarizing to say that overall, the system that we run has come to the end of its life. It can no longer be sustained. We can try, as PRASA, our job is to, of course, make sure that we keep in place strategies to keep it running. But the most important emphasis for us is the replacement of the old with the new. Now, we did conduct a feasibility study on this program, and I'm just going to outline some of the results for it. So the feasibility study has gone through all the governance processes. We've submitted that to the Minister of Transport. We're discussing the financing structure with the department, with the National Treasury, and we've looked at the business case, the economic case, and we're busy with the long distance trains as well. This is here. I'm dealing with the commuter trains. We are almost done with the study for the long distance side to see how do we recapitalize and how do we buy for that. And we know that the long distance is what connects the urban metropolitan centers with the rural areas of the country. We are appointing a transaction advisor. We've completed with the evaluation, and this will be the transaction advisor will be the one who's helping us to write the tender documentation so that we issue a request for proposal and advise us on managing the entire transaction as it will. We have got a special board meeting on the 10th, which will basically finalize the all these processes. So these are some of the details that we have of the program that we are presenting today. We need to buy for Metro Rail 7,224 units. Mm.
Are you using the coach?
The coach. Mm. And you see that currently we've got only 4,600 coaches. Half of them not working. So we're doubling the capacity there with modern trains that we have. We are going to require at least 360 coaches a year over the next 10 years, with an option, of course, to run for another 10 years and buy additional trains. The total cost, 123.5 billion rand over the 20-year period. The number of jobs, 65,000 direct and indirect jobs, that would be created. Where do we buy the trains? We are allowing for local capability to evolve through 65% local content, so that the trains are not bought overseas, they are manufactured in South Africa. And I said in the last briefing to the committee that the provinces are already tossing the coins where the plants should be. People in Pretoria say the plants must be there. People in Limpopo say the plants must be there.
Victoria, where the CEO is.
Where the CEO is. That's where we must start now, so that we can demonstrate that the things are working indeed. Tshwane.
Okay.
It's in Tshwane. So I think that we are insistent and say that if you take a shortcut and want to have the quick trains coming in within a short space of time, then don't talk about the 65,000 jobs. Don't talk about local coaches. It means you can simply order those and assemble them anywhere in the country. And that's where, that I think is a major trade-off from a strategy point of view. said these are some of the issues, electrical, these units that we are buying. Of course, I want to report there was a huge debate in the past whether we're going to have a cape gauge or high-speed gauge. For the commuter network, we do not need. We are not expanding the gauge for the commuter network. To leave from Simonstown to come to Cape Town, with stations less than 2 kilometers, we don't need high speed. Even countries that run high gauge on the commuter side, they are running on average 100 kilometers per hour. Because if you put the high speed, and that is why the Hull train, as I explained in the past, is not a typical commuter system. It's actually a regional system. It's
say
not a commuter system.
Say it again.
That if you look at the commuter system all over the world, it will run on average at 100 to 120 kilometers per hour. Because the stations are closer to each other. They are you move, and then within 2 kilometers, you're stopped. The Hull train is not your typical commuter rail system. It's in fact a regional system where you see even the distances between the stations are not within that range, and therefore you can accelerate and decelerate within that. But in the commuter network, if you leave Fishhook, you're going to Muizenberg. You can't accelerate 260 kilometers per hour. So even with the standard gauge or the high-speed gauge, for the commuter network, you don't need to move at those speeds. It's not possible. However, we do recognize that on the intercity, South Africa, because of its long distances, Johannesburg, Cape Town, Johannesburg, Durban, Johannesburg, Mthatha, I wanted to use Mthatha. The distances are long that it justifies. So the long distances are not good for commuter rail, but they are good for high-speed intercity travel.
Okay.
And I think that when we report back, you see that the current system that we run on metro on Shosholozame is not viable in its form as it is. The long distances will support the emergence of a high-speed rail based on a standard gauge, on a high-speed gauge, as it were. Whether we want to do it today or want to do it in 10 years' time, I think that is a choice that we want to make. So we've made this. So we're going to run on the current infrastructure as it is, because the current infrastructure, I must report, I know that Mr. Faraway dealt with the Hull train in this committee in the past. People forget that in the 80s, between Tshwane and Johannesburg, there was a train running at 160 kilometers per hour. It was called the Metro Blitz. The Orlando Pirates striker was named after that train. It used to travel within the hour between Johannesburg and Pretoria. So 160 kilometers is not a new thing. However, because we've allowed the infrastructure to deteriorate so much, running that train at 160 kilometers would pose some serious safety risk. We do sometimes run our business express trains at about 130 kilometers per hour. It tells you that the current network can absorb speeds up to 160 kilometers if properly maintained and that kind of thing. It also tells us that when we look at the long distances, there is no justification why someone who travels from Queenstown to Johannesburg should travel for 20 hours when we should be running those trains for at 160, because the current network allows for that kind of speed. So one of the major issues we've got to revisit is the speed on our trains on the long distance side. But on the commuter network side, even if we improve service levels, reliability, the speeds are going to be 100 and 120. They are not going to exceed that. The number of vehicles, as you see, currently or rather capacity, you see that these trains will have the capacity to load 2,500 rather than the current 2,000. Secondly, that it means therefore that the new rolling stock will be 12% higher in capacity than the existing trains that we have. The estimated cost, if you buy 3,600 first batch in the first 10 years, we'll spend about 61.6 billion rand. And of course, if we increase that number on the current feasibility of 5,712 coaches, we'll spend 97 billion rand. And of course, the total 7,224 That's what comes 223 billion rands over 20 years. Those are the breakdowns of what we're talking about. If you look at the regression analysis, you look at the growth, you compare GDP, yeah, because one of the major things that is driving demand in railways is the growth in population and GDP. So this slide is trying to tell that, in fact, it's very important that you look at those and analyze your and understand your demand. Again, when you look at the historic commuter volumes and future year, what this slide tells us is that if we buy new trains, but we do not improve, for example, on the service offering on the infrastructure, we are also not solving the problem. So the answer is not only to buy new trains, but it's also to increase the capacity of the network, the frequencies, and all of those things so that we can get. And this slide is basically trying to tell us about the... So you can buy new trains, but if, for example, the on-time travel, the passenger convenience and everything is not improved, we're basically not changing the situation at all. And you see the number of breakdowns, the breakdown in terms of the number of vehicles that we have. We spoke about the demonstration corridors. Vehicles, we need 50% of those, of the new vehicles, that's where they'll be deployed. 23% will be put in what you call corridors, which are corridors, which are high-volume corridors. We've got high numbers of passengers. For example, you'll have the line from Wellington to Kraaifontein to Belleville to Cape Town. That will be a corridor. The numbers of people traveling on that corridor are huge. So you'll see that other than your demonstration corridors for 2014, you'll see that the next level where we're deploying the new trains would be in what you call A corridors, 23% of that. Then we've got what you call B corridors, which are medium-sized corridors, and we've got C corridors, that are them. Now we've got new corridors that we implement in the short term. I want to mention two corridors that we have in that space, in Kwamash, between Kwamash and Duzuma, Inanda and Phoenix in the KZN area. We've got a new corridor there called the Bridge City. SASA has already invested, as we speak, R1 billion into that new project. So that will be additional capacity in that new corridor. The second corridor that we talk about is the line between the doubling of the line on the Pretoria side in Tshwane and in Mamelodi. Then the third one that we're talking about, you'll be happy to hear, is a new line that we're building between Motherwell and Port Elizabeth. That will be part of the new corridors in the short term. And then I've got the remainder, the balance of that going to what we call new corridors in the long term. And I think we've identified those around the country. I'll go into detail perhaps later on about what are some of those corridors where we think we should be opening new railway lines or we should be revitalizing new lines. We've identified four in Polokwane. As a start, we've identified again, as I mentioned in the committee last week, the line between Queenstown, UK, Umtata. I spoke about that. Our team will be looking at that existing line with a view to rehabilitate. We'll spend 100 million just rehabilitating the line, and then we'll renew the stations there. I think that we look at about 8 stations on that line, including basically it's going to be a major connection between Umtata and Queenstown and both Johannesburg as well as East London. So that is a major one for the Eastern Cape. I think that we think that we will provide the major connection for the line there. So that is a breakdown of the... When we talk about the 7,224 vehicles that we want to buy, that is a makeup, that is a breakdown of where they will be, where they will be deployed over that period of time. This is again by region. You'll see that most of those will be in Gauteng 2004, Western Cape 1.8, Etekwini 936, Eastern Cape 228, and the new corridors will take 228, which are spread in the different corridors. And of course, we still have the 101.5 that are there. That is the total number of the fleet that we've deployed it. Now, again, this is still an explanation of a detailed thing, breaking down the distribution of those vehicles, and you can see that on your left hand side, you've got the current fleet. Of course, I think that by June We had most of that fleet not being operational, but the numbers, the situation has changed to date. We've got about 3,006 in operation, but we still have a lot of those that are either going through refurbishment or repair work, as it were. And the others, I think that and I think that on your right hand side, it explains our short and the long term requirement of these trains. Here, this slide, I think it's very important that I explained it. Unfortunately, I don't have a pointer because I was going to point, but if I look at the colors, I'm not good with the colors. This shows the actual replacement strategy. It shows you that if you look at the numbers that all the other trains, the new trains that we're talking about is the bar, I don't know what color is that, the gray one, and right at the top there. The department has got these resources here. These are the new trains here. You can see from 2014 when we introduced the new trains over a period of time when we buy. And these are the old trains here. You could see that as we start here, it means we are also starting to replace the current fleet. So that is your replacement thing. So the trains that we bought in the 1980s, in 1986, that train that we bought in 1986, the 8Ms that we operate in the Western Cape, it means that train, we are going to scrap it in 2033. It means we'll be starting to scrap here, as I said that in the previous slide, that we've got many trains that are already due for scrapping in the next 4 or 5 years. Those will start to scrap at that time, but you could see that with how much we scrap, it will be a function of how many we are able to bring into the system. So we can't start scrapping when this thing has not reached a critical mass. So as we introduce new trains, it means therefore that you can see that we know. So here, that's where some break-even points will come in there, where we know that we can start. But in the short term, it tells you that Prasa still has to do a lot of maintenance and refurbishment on the current fleet just to buy a bit of time as we introduce. Because you can't scrap, I think the numbers that are new here will not be sufficient enough to enable you to embark on that. So this slide summarizes our replacement strategy in NSL. What will be coming in over a period of time, the quantities that I mentioned, and so you'll see that when the last train will be scrapped. And I think that it comes from the 8M. We'll take it here from on the Kailisha line and scrap it at that time. And I want to assure you, Honorable Faro, that young as I am, I'll be there to witness the scraping of that. Thank you. I'll pick up my feet here. The infrastructure intervention. I think that I showed in one of the earlier slides that if we buy the trains only, we are not going to improve the service. It must be a common, in fact, it must be preceded by a program to bring some infrastructure improvements and changes. And here you can see that, again, as we've shown, that we've got this demonstration corridors that I've explained, that is very important that you get the infrastructure ready to prepare for these new trains. We can't get the first trains first and start to improve. So that is why, part of the reason why we are delivering these trains, not in 2012 or 2013, is precisely because we must prepare, do a lot of preparations to turn around this infrastructure and modernize it so that when the new trains, because the new trains will have a on-board signaling, they'll have an automatic train protection, then we should be able to talk to the infrastructure outside. So the infrastructure is very important to be able to meet all of that. So that tells you, so there's an additional 13 billion rand, which forms part of the you'd recall I spoke about 136 billion rand as the total recapitalization of Metro Rail. 13 billion of that is what will go towards the infrastructure improvements. As we speak, Prasa has been allocated for the next 3 years 19.5 billion rand to make sure that we bring about the infrastructure improvements. And I must also report that we've made enormous progress on some of those. On the signaling side, as I said, We appointed Siemens in December. Chair, Siemens has completed one element of what we've asked them to do. Between Midway and Lens, where we used to have lots of accidents in the past. We've asked them to say prioritize and introduce a solution that is based on modern technology. Last week, Monday, it came into operation. They are building a train control center where we'll be able to see all the trains in Kalfontein, that where we'll be able to control all the movements of these modern trains throughout the province. So from the signaling side, we're moving in speed, and said that PRASA, as I said in the last committee meeting, will issue two tenders for the resignaling. We've done Gauteng, which is where Siemens was appointed, but the resignaling of the whole of the KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape commuter network will happen this year. So we'll issue those tenders, finalize them, and make sure that we move with speed. All in all, PRASA will spend 17 billion rands on the signaling upgrade program, as it were, to make sure that we prepare for that. And these are numbers that already are beginning to be reflected in our MTF budget. So when I raised the red flag, Honorable Faro, the numbers were not confirmed. But today, as I said, that I request the committee to allow me to sing a different tune. Because we've been working very closely through a team with the Department of Transport, National Treasury, where they put in the numbers there. What helped us, Chairperson, is that when we raised the red flag, the committee prepared the report to Parliament. And that report stated very clearly that it is important to recapitalize. And I think that the PRASA, if we only praise ourselves and do not recognize the important intervention made by this committee in making sure that also the voice is heard, would not have achieved the level. So that is a role that the committee could play. If it takes up, we do report about the problems and say we need an intervention. And today we are no longer raising the red flag. We are talking about the implementation of this program, as it were. And you'll see when I present the timeline for that. So, Chair, this is a victory for Parliament, it's a victory for the committees, and it's a victory for the people of South Africa. Okay. It's not a victory for PRASA alone. I think that is something that the committees, the chairs of the committee forums have asked me that they attend this committee next week. They want to accompany us because they want to say to us that we've been fighting with Metro Rail over the years, and we think that all our cries have been heard by government, have been heard in Parliament, and they say that when we discuss the benefits of that program, that they need to be here so that they can witness for themselves that indeed this is the work that is being done. So these are, again, the corridors that I spoke about. I'm not going to repeat. These are demonstration corridors. These are the corridors where we say, in the next 3 years, if we want to have visible, for the commuters to experience visible improvements, they're going to happen here. We will no longer be running an old system. We'll be running a modern railway system from 2014 onwards. The signaling, the speed gates, and all of those things, that's what we have to do. That's where our people should experience that the quality of service, that they can travel on this system in dignity, that they can get a reliable service, it's safe, and that's what we're working towards. I know that people will say we want it tomorrow, but say I think that to undo 30 years of underinvestment can't be done, and it can't be done in such a short period of time. The undertaking we're making is that we'll deliver it within 4 years, and I think that we think that it's quite a reasonable proposition. It coincides with the 2014 election, so I'm not sure how it's going to be handled there. We've had an engagement with the market on this issue. It's not something that we've been keeping internally. We've had a market engagement in May with rolling stock manufacturers, with rolling stock financiers, with the BEE players, and of course that there was a study that was done by the United Nations Industrial Development Organization. That looks at that. It looks at the readiness of South African companies to absorb that, and it shows that based on the survey that they did, that we can take about 70 to 80% local content on this. That is achievable. We think, realistically speaking, when we assess the industry, the capacity that exists, it recalls that South Africa had an engineer who worked in this industry 20-25 years ago. He said, but Mr. Montana, how do you say that we should do 65%? We can do 80%. Mm-hmm. So I want to say that South Africa in the 60s, 70s had the capacity to design, to manufacture, to maintain its own trains. But that capacity, because we've never invested, has been significantly eroded. So I think that when he was saying that to me, he was talking in the conditions of the 1970s, but that capacity we no longer have today. Even the natural rate rolling stock depots are not in a position to respond to what we want today in terms of the level of maintenance and all of those things. We see it in Cape Town here with the fluctuations of availability. One day you've got the 85% of the trains of your train sets available, the next day you're standing at 75%. So it tells you the problem that we have. So we've engaged with the market. They are ready. They're the ones who said to us that if you want that high level of local content, make sure that you put in the enough numbers of this train so that we can justify investing in the country. And they said to us that they need a minimum of 250 units a year to justify that level of investment. We need about 350 from a system that is affordable. If you ask me from where I sit as a CEO of Prasa, how many, in fact, that the system will require in the order of 560 to 600 coaches a year. However, we understand that we need to find a balance. Some of it reflects, of course, the long-term requirements. So I think that over time we'll be able to find a balance. So if you look at the summary of the results, I think that you can see the three scenarios there. If we spend the 123 billion rand, how much do we get on our investment? And you see here the multiplier is a 2.5. So for every rand that we spend, we get an additional 2.5% of that. If you look, for example, if we go for 60% local content, you see, for example, on the number of jobs, we get about 61,000 jobs, as it were. If you look at the government revenue in the form of indirect taxes, company taxes, personal taxes, will go about 73.3 billion rand. If you do we go for a local 65 local content, which is what we've recommended to government, you'll see that the number of jobs, I spoke about 65,000 jobs, we can go, we will be able to get 65,000 jobs and a 79 billion rand revenue in the form of taxes to the state. And the economy-wide benefit, you can see, is the top line there, as it were. But if you go, you want to increase beyond 65, you go to 70%, you'll see that, again, the number of jobs, they increase. But we think that we want to pitch it at a more realistic level, as it were. So this is a breakdown that emerges out of the feasibility study that has been done, that we completed a few months ago. Employment results, I think that you'll see the numbers are very slow, but it shows you the areas where we are going to be able to create jobs. More specifically, you see there within the transport sector, the financial sector. I think that you've got quite a lot of those. That is the building and construction, business services, community, personal services, catering and accommodation. All of those combine to give you that economic case on the return on that investment for the country. Main features of this procurement, how do you buy it? There's a lot of debate whether we should have two or three companies, whether we should have one 20-year contract. So I think that the contract first and foremost would be for the design, the build, to design, to build, and certain level of maintenance by rolling stock manufacturer. Chair, I think that we are buying technology here. That's the most important thing. The key thing we are buying here is technology. Because we are saying we are modernizing, we want to make a break with the 1956 technology. So that is why the contract is structured in the manner that we have. Contract size, even though we are doing it over 20 years, but we are dividing those into 10 years in many countries, they confirm the first thing with the second batch being more flexible, so that you are able to play around when you've got your requirement changes, and you can also look at that in terms of the market conditions and the demand for rail at that time. And so we say that we're aiming at the most for two suppliers, but we can also do it with one supplier. We have to look at whether I think that the country will have to look at whether from an investment point of view, capacity point of view, and all of those things, and of course for the return on that investment, whether we should have two. But we'll see that when we deal with the tender processes, as it were. See, I think that I've dealt with the period for the delivery of the coaches. I won't go much for that. But I think that we are making sure that particularly the tender document is so flexible enough, not to allow for manipulation, but in a way that allows and protect the interests of Prague, so that we are not sitting. 20 years is a long time. That the changes in our own cities and will change so much that we should be able to have the option to be able to renegotiate and deal with some of the options over there. Benefits of the renewal program, Chair, I'm going to deal with those in detail next week, but just to flesh some of the issues that are there. Chair, I think the first benefit, I've spoken about introduction of high quality services, particularly in the demonstration corridors, which expand throughout the system. But if you look specifically at what this program does, first and foremost, it is introducing modern railway technologies in our country. We have said we have missed three railway revolutions in the country. We are now using this program to reverse all of that. Secondly, from a safety point of view, it will be a major progress. Chairperson, a train with a train protection, automatic train protection, it means that it's got automatic train protection is a feature of safety, is a function of safety in any train. We won't have similar accidents that we had in Soweto, Chair, where a driver comes and plunges into another train. Because these trains will have the necessary sensors, it will have the necessary electronic technologies, and that if a driver moves beyond a speed where there's alignment between the train and the infrastructure, it will automatically apply brakes. If the driver stops, he runs out of he has a heart attack as he's driving the train, keeps on moving, it will automatically apply brakes. If the driver does, so that is a modern train that we're talking about. It will have the features that we want. So it's a technology that we're buying, but it has got major impact on safety. Thirdly, Chair, we've got socio-economic benefits. Those who said we'll deal with that next week in detail. The jobs, where we're creating them, the black economic empowerment, and I want to come back, Chair, to the new generation of railway workers. That the old engineers and artisans, their time is up. Railway engineer. Indeed. Well, the science in the engineers, but I think that we'll have new trains, so we need the new engineers and artisans to run this. And I think that one of the major things that we'll insist in the contract is the fact that whoever wins that has to train these engineers and to train these artisans. That is going to be an insistence that we have, Chair. Already on the signaling, we have that being done. And let me indicate, Chair, that I'm talking about rolling stock. Let me indicate something on the signaling system. On the signaling system, we're not only introducing the electronic interlocking system. One of the major things that this new technology brings for us is the flexibility. It's what you call bi-directional signaling system. So if you look at the HAL train, if today you've got a problem, you've got the two tracks going the opposite direction. If you've got a problem on this track, it means you can move trains on the other track in the opposite direction. We are not able to do that with the metro rail system today because the trains, the signaling is built for only one direction. If you have a problem, everything comes to a standstill. So this new signaling system allows you to be able to operate in either direction so that you don't paralyze the system, you are more flexible, and that is why we are emphasizing this technology that is there. Chairperson, on the energy side, we know that the current railway trains that we have in our country are heavy. So from an energy point of view, this require a lot of energy. These new trains, light, aluminium, and Chair, I think that from an energy efficiency point of view, they're very crucial. The old trains, if you look at the size of the bogie, it's heavy. So to move that train, you require a lot of energy. The new technologies, the new trains that are coming into the world are different. Steel, aluminium, and the body is designed differently to do that. And the and what the traction is spread throughout the train. It's not only, currently we rely on what you call a motor coaches to pull the whole train. If that motor, something goes wrong with that motor coach, it's all over. It means the train stops. Whereas these modern trains, the traction is spread throughout in such a way that even if you have one problem with the coach, the entire train will be able to move until you have taken that out. So these are part of the, these are some of the things that we are requiring you to buy. Chairperson, one of the major benefits we're talking about is our rail engineering industry. We have allowed it to go down. I said we could design, manufacture, and maintain our trains. This program presents us with an opportunity to revitalize and to grow our rail engineering industry. Not only for South Africa, but it means for the whole of Africa and probably internationally. The areas where we should be specializing and in such a way that the world, Africa and the world, will be able to get this from us. That's where we're going to create jobs. Local manufacturing is going to be very important. And I think, Chair, this fits in with the industrial strategy and the growth path to say, reverse the history of deindustrialization. Build again the local manufacturing capacity. That's where your jobs and your skills are going to come from. And this program, the way we buy this stock, we buy the, what is it called, the transport equipment, is aimed at taking forward that. And so we got a major opportunity to revitalize the rail engineering industry. And we are not doing it alone. There's coordination between us with the Transnet through the Department of Transport, the Department of Public Enterprises, that even when we buy locomotives, let's work together to make sure that we get the benefits to the economy as a whole. So at the heart of it, in 10 years' time, we should say that we've invested 123 billion rand. The entire rail industry that you have in the East Rand, in what is it called, in Benoni, Jamestown, and all of that area, is lying dormant at this point in time. This program is an opportunity. And for us, we're selfish about it, because if we revitalize that, the entire area then rail, it means therefore that our stations like Jamestown, Isando, will come back to life as they were in the 1970s and the 1980s. So we've got a selfish interest in revitalizing that. And of course, here I've spoken about the economic benefits in terms of GDP. I think that this program creates wealth, and it makes sure that there is still back to the national fiscal in the form of taxes that we can reinvest. I would say that if we generate an additional 80 billion, reinvest again in back to railways, but we know that that must go to the National Revenue Fund and it's used. But I think that it shows the impact that if you use this program, you move with speed in implementing it, you'll be able to win. Chair, the next step, sir, I'm almost at the end. We'll be appointing this month the transaction advisor. So we are sending out the message out there that we are ready, we are implementing, we are rolling out this program. There's no more turning back. And you see that the advisors, the transaction advisor, would basically advise us on technology, on infrastructure improvements that are required to support the rolling stock, on the financing on this, as well as the legal and commercial aspects of that. So, Chair, that will have that in place, and the work will move to the third phase where we prepare to go out formally to the market. We are finalizing the financial arrangements. Hopefully, when the budget next is presented, we'll get even greater commitment and indication. I won't go much into that detail at this point in time because that has been discussed at Treasury. So we really want to jump the gun on that one. On the 22nd of November this year, Chair, we'll be inviting, because we've had the request from black-owned companies, women-owned companies, who say that, look, they can't be left behind. They want to understand the 65 local content, which components they want to specialize in. On the 25th, we're having a market engagement dedicated to BEE players in the industry. Hopefully, we'll have it broadly representative, and we have a participation that reflects more of our people. We'll then convene a final engagement with rolling stock manufacturers and financiers in February 2012. That is basically to give the final indication of the rules of the game before we take this thing out. We issue a request for proposal. And of course, Chair, as I said, that when we appoint a transaction advisor, it means the procurement documentation would be prepared. So the decision, Chair, to proceed to this program, it's already been made. There's no more going back onto decision. South Africa needs new trains. We need, as we said, that the current system has come to the end of its life. There's no other alternative. And I think that we are saying that we require 3 years to do this work for us to have a modern system that all South Africans, young and old, black and white, rural and urban, will be proud of. And I think that's what we're looking at. Now, in terms of the timetable, which is my final slide here, that's basically what we're talking about in real terms here. I know that the manufacturers have told us that this is quite an aggressive program, but we respect the fact that in real terms, after we sign the contract, we'll be able to. So the sooner we sign the contract and we drive that process. I know that COSATU has asked us, Chair, to say they accept the program, but can you please try to shorten and make that to happen much quicker? The workers are paying the price. They're getting disciplined. They're getting dismissed and everything. We hear their calls. We have to address the other issues. But we said that there's nothing you're going to do. You're not going to have these modern trains much earlier. We can start to talk about 2014, 2015 onwards as a realistic time for the delivery of the first trains. And I think that it will be great when this committee comes and be part of the first test of a modern train that all our people, Chair, will be able to use. So I think that is a detail of our fleet renewal program. As I said, Chair, at the beginning, I'm no longer raising the red flag. I think both government and parliament have given us the means and the instruments to change. The key thing for CLASA, on behalf of government, on behalf of the committers, on behalf of the South African public, is to make sure that we get on with the work and deliver on this program and make a meaningful change in the lives of people. And Chair, I think that in the next meeting, which is scheduled next week, we then look at in detail what are the benefits to the South African, to our own people, in terms of this program as part of the second phase of this presentation. I know that I never dealt at length. We'll deal, Chair, I think that we'll ask for a separate session to deal with the transformation that we want to deal with on the long distance side. But today, we recognize that Metro Rail is at the heart of our own economy. It moves massive numbers of people on any given day, and you need to start to recapitalize that system as quickly as possible. And this is the plan, Chairperson, that the PRASA team that is with me here has put together, and so it's beginning to roll out. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think there's progress that is being made. And also it is a very clear strategy. One can link the strategy to the challenges that the country is faced with, as well as the transformation agenda in terms of an ideal South Africa as opposed to the current South Africa in terms of transport. And I think also that if South Africa was to implement this program, of course with maybe the additions that would be made by members if they think that there are gaps, I think we could demonstrate that it is possible in Africa to operate at the same level as the developed countries. And we would also look at how South Africa plays a role in ensuring that the African continent also benefit from the program that South Africa would be leading. So that we don't only get involved in peacemaking, but we also contribute to the social and economic development of the continent. Of course, with the benefits to ourselves and the rest of Africa. It should not be difficult for a person who lives in Zimbabwe to travel to South Africa and be there in 4 hours or less than 4 hours, instead of spending 5 days at the Bay Bridge during the peak period. I am now going to give an opportunity to members to respond, and we have also distributed the copies of the report of the Committee of Transport, a report on the study tour to China. And we want to emphasize here that we are not talking a project. We're talking a strategy and a model for the country. Mm. And projects are born out of a clear strategy and a clear model. What has been happening in the past is that the investment of government in anything during the apartheid era, which unfortunately also continues even during the democratic era, is that people focus on projects instead of focusing on the strategy and the model. And we go to other countries not to look at projects. We go to other countries to look at their strategy and also to understand the model that they developed and how that model relates to the problems that they want to address. And if we have chosen a country, we choose a country because there are similarities in terms of the challenges that we are faced with and we want to address. So projects then are born out of that. And anyone can get involved at a project level, but at a strategic level, Parliament has a role to play, and this committee has got a role to play so that we can influence a direction to say, this is where we are finding a good model that speaks to our situation and what we want to address. I am saying this because the debate in the past about whether South Africa has to invest in the railway industry has been led by professors in the universities who have not gone to look at what is existing in other countries, and also who are not public representatives tasked with the responsibility of providing solutions in this country. And we want to turn that situation around and make sure that the transformation agenda is led by the people who are charged with the responsibility of doing so. It is not led by the people who do not have that responsibility. We hope they will engage and make contributions in terms of what we are saying and also in terms of a broader understanding of the issues that we are dealing with. We are not just moving from a narrow gauge to a standard gauge, which is what the argument has been in the past. We are looking at how the railway industry responds to the challenges presented in the report of the public transport survey that was conducted in 2003. And what is it that we are learning from other countries? And what model can we develop then that speaks to our own conditions? That's what we are doing. And I'm going to open an opportunity to members to comment and make their own observations and contributions. Honorable Faro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Lucky, for giving us such excitement about this project, which we've all been calling for. And this is 123 billion rand over the next sort of 10, 12 years or so, which is, you know, more or less equivalent to even as big as the Army. And I think it's very important that we understand the momentum that has got to be needed here to be able to take this project forward successfully, and the implications that go with it in terms of ensuring that we get what you've indicated here as the benefits, and those are ensuring safety, economic benefits for this country, not abroad, and I stress that, and the revitalization of this railway industry for the best benefit of all the commuters in this country. But, you know, before we embark, I was expecting you to at least give us some indications as to how you're going to fix up what is wrong right now. Last week in your annual report, you indicated this billion loss that you're sitting with. You indicated this declining fare income of 39%. You talked about the decline in passenger trips. You talked about the 9.3 million in wasteful and fruitless expenditure and the paralyzed Shoshadozamail. We know about it. So now, we need to be able to reverse that, because you can put all the new fancy, you know, units and trains onto the service that we have at present. But how do we win now back the support of lost customers, who are those people that you see standing on the side of the railway because of the breakdowns and everything? Now, if I recall correctly, the last time you spoke here, a couple of years back, you talked about the crisis that faced us. It was at that stage put similar to the Eskom crisis. And there were some very urgent actions that we thought we should take in trying to get what's wrong right now. And this entailed some quick procurements, off-the-shelf type procurements, which at least get going what we've got. So that you know that the momentum that you'll gather from that will take you into a new generation of trains. And I just want some answers possibly as to what you're going to do to remarket and to rebrand Prasa, Metro Rail and Shoshalosa Rail, which has lost confidence with the commuters. So that's the first issue. The other thing which I was hoping you were going to give us some insight into is the problem that we're very concerned about here and have raised on a number of occasions between yourselves and Transnet, who own the infrastructure. Now, you talked about the fact that you have this 18 billion asset which you could use and utilize to to gather, let's call, opportunity for investment. But when Transnet are fighting with you as to whether you can use their diesel engines or whether you can actually operate on their lines, and they charge you, as we know, over $300 million a year to do a service effectively which is part of this country's needs and economy, then I have worrying problems, because we need to sort those issues out and decide how best it's going to be for the interests of the country, not for Transnet's balance sheet on the one hand and Prasa's loss on the other. So please, I appeal to you, Lucky, to try and see if we can't get those issues back to us and inform us what you're going to do about it. Now, in the beginning of this year sometime, we had an investment conference. And at that investment conference, they split them into two groups. One went into roads and the other one went into rail. And looking at the rail thing, despite the fact that half of it was discussing the Arrowsmith, you know, bypass, the fact is I want to know this, that investors want to know that if they're going to come and put money into any rail initiative, that there's going to be a sense of security of knowing that their purway, that's the railway line that operation is going to take place on, is going to be there in, not for the short term, but also for the long term, because we're talking about, as you said, 30, 40 years where this generation of coaches will operate. The other thing which I want to talk about, which I'm very excited about, is the local content. And the more we can increase that, the better we can, because we're fully aware of many other countries in Africa which, despite the chairperson's sort of thought, where China has got technology, there are other technologies. And we must look what's best for this country that is not going to impact on the fact that we're going to end up bringing people from overseas to run these operations here. They must be homegrown, they must be home run, and home manufactured. And I'm worried that, you know, in order to get the local industry working, that we might end up replicating the infrastructure. Because I know, and you know, that we have seven, if I remember, carriage construction businesses. Yeah, let's call them a carriage assembly plants in this country. That were here, you know, in the 80s, and are now sitting there twiddling their thumbs doing the odd thing here or there. So we do have infrastructure. So we don't need to go and put up another big factory to go and to do these coaches for us. So that's the other thing, and I'd like to just see if, you know, how your thinking goes on that. Now, we cannot ignore Shosha Lozamayo. You say that we're going to talk about it another time, but it's part of the problem. We all know that we have got a rural development program which was set out by the president, which entails taking, you know, opportunity to people out in the rural poor. There are branch lines which are sitting moribund, of which there were some advertising that went out recently to see how they could be best used. And we know that people in the rural area find it very difficult to get into the urban. So what are we doing about that? And when are we going to see some... Is this procurement including those? I'm assuming you're going to, because their coaches are, and infrastructure is 33 years old. Maybe it's 5 years less than Metrorail. But needless to say, we need to fix those things up as well. Let me leave it there. Then I think if there's another opportunity, I'll come back. Thanks.
I have recognized Honorable De Freitas and Honorable Suga. But before we move to them, I think I need to clarify something here, that at this stage we are dealing with the strategy and the model. We are not talking technology. When you are dealing with the strategy and the model, you have not arrived at what type of soap you are going to use to wash your boat. You are actually identifying the good method of washing the boat. That for you to come up with a clean body, you need water that is boiled. To kill the germs, you need the, all the ingredients, and you need people that are able to wash the boat. That doesn't say that when you have found a model that speaks to your problem, you are also marrying yourself to the technology that is produced in that country. That is the difference. Honorable Faro is talking the technology. I am talking the model. He is talking the language of a builder. I am talking the language of an architect. Yes. I am drawing a plan which will then be read by the builder. And if there is no plan, the builder will not even know whether he or she has to buy a nail or a tape. So I want people to understand the level we are at, that is. There is no one who is married to any type of a technology coming from any country. What we are doing at the moment, we are finding a solution that relates to our problems. And the solution that we are talking about is the solution that says both our rail infrastructure and our rolling stock has reached its life term. That is the point of departure. And then the second issue that we are looking at is what other problems besides the railway line that has reached its lifetime span and the locomotives that have reached their lifetime span? What are the other problems? Because that is what then informs you to choose a country that you would want to learn from, because you will choose a country on the basis of the problems that their model is responding to. If their problems are similar to your problems, then the model requires you to study that model. Forget about the technology, because the technology can be developed. We can come up with our own technology, but if we don't have a model that sticks to our problem, for what reason can we be developing technology? The second issue that I want to address here, so that we move from the same page, is that when we invite our agencies, we write them a letter that is explaining the purpose of the meeting. And if what has been given to them doesn't include all these other issues that are being raised here, it will not be then correct to expect them to respond to issues that we never put in our letter that was inviting them. And in every meeting, before we start a meeting, I explain the purpose of the meeting so that members are then able to relate and reflect on the decisions that we have taken in the past and why we are having the presentation. And before then, I open an opportunity for members to ask questions. I also paraphrase and indicate whether the presentation relates to the purpose of the meeting, and I have done so in this meeting. If there are any other issues that you would like to address, we then need to talk about those issues as a follow-up and not to expect that the entity is supposed to include something that we never asked them to include. Because the issues of marketing, the issues of winning back the customer, that is even now at a project level. It is an operational issue that relates to a project. The third issue that I want to raise is that we cannot expect a CEO of an entity to respond to the relationship which is known to all of us that that relationship is not their own making. The current relationship between TASA and Transnet is not the making of TASA and Transnet. It is the making of us. It is us who have to come up with the solution. That is why we stopped the issue of being reactionary and call meetings each time there has been a problem in terms of train. And we see that in issues in the media, a CEO of TASA and a CEO of Transnet responding to each other that you did this and you were supposed to do it because that is operational. We listen to what TASA explains as the cause of that problem. And then we deal with the problem because that is a strategic level. So the answer to problems that exist, which are a result of an institutional arrangement, cannot come from trust. Those answers will come from Parliament. Because the institutional arrangement is a creation of Parliament. It is not a creation of trust, nor a creation of Transnet. So I am not going to allow the CEO to respond to issues that were created by us. He must respond to what we ask him to come and present to us.
Sir, my hand was up also. My hand was up.
Honorable De Freitas.
Thank you, Chair. I have a few questions, but I'd just like to start off with a comment. I think, first of all, thanks very much to Lucky for the presentation. Just concise and very exciting to see. I think he needs to just realize that he's preaching to the choir, I think, in this committee. You have to convince us how important the work that you're doing and the need for this project. What I want to say is that the upgrading and the introduction and improvement of rail is probably the closest that we can get to negate apartheid planning. The reality is that our people are all over the place and they live and work from distances far apart. And rail would be the way to go, besides all the other economic factors that then have an impact on the country. The reality is that developing countries, I believe, are developed because of rail, that they implemented many years back and then maintained and continue to do so. So I think that's certainly the answer. And then that would then contribute to the rest of the continent that we can then integrate with our neighbours and up north, and we can then be more mobile throughout the continent. So I think it's very, very important, very exciting what you're doing. So thank you, Lucky. I do have some questions on clarity. Honourable Farrow had questions which I won't repeat. But there's just some others that I have, and that is, you talk about all these new carriages that are coming in, and obviously with that, quite likely, as you said, comes improvements of service by the employees and so forth. The reality is that there's been a culture developed, if you like, that, you know, we've got such a bad system at the moment that this impact on the actual work and the modus operandi of our employees. Have you looked, have you considered as well that with all this new refurbishment must come a new mindset, a new way of thinking, a new way of operating? Because it would be the most terrible injustice if we got all this wonderful equipment and technology and then we found that our staff are letting us down. So if I could just ask you if you have looked at that. And then sorry, I'm just going through because I wrote questions throughout the presentation. In one of the slides you talk about the new generation coaches. Am I right in saying the ones that are in purple that are 16 to 21 years old? Am I right in saying that these are the ones from the 80s in the Western Cape, if that is correct? They're the ones that are still the what you call the new generation coaches. If you could just tell us in what part of the country they are. I mean, are we the ones in the Western Cape? Am I right in saying that those are just the ones, or are there others as well? And then, with regard to you, you talk about your progress to date, discussing with National Treasury on the financing and so forth. And of course, the big stickler in this whole thing is the financing part. Tell us about your considerations about PVPs, partnerships, and so forth. Because the reality is that government and PRASA can't do it on their own. We have to get into the partnerships if we have this, if we're going to make all this a reality. So have you looked at innovative, interesting ways of financing this, perhaps with partners? And if you could unpack that for us. You also talk about you talk about new corridors, short term and long term. Can you just give us, when you say short term and long term, just give us the time frames of what you're talking about, all these new corridors that you're talking about in the presentation. And then the scrapping, sorry, you do answer that question. And then I found your slide very interesting with regard to the what you call the economic valuation, summary of results. And you talk about the economic impact that this project would have. Where did you get this information from? This is very interesting. And obviously we're getting just a broad brushstroke presentation. But where did you get this from? Is it from an informed source? How did they get to these numbers and so forth? I'm not necessarily expecting you to give us exactly the answer to that, but perhaps a source that I could perhaps follow up on and read on, because this is very powerful information. And that needs to, we need to get South Africa behind us, because it's not about rail, it's about developing this country and its economy and so forth. And then you mentioned something about the contracts, and you said that the first batch procurement to extend over 10 years and to aim for two suppliers. Why are you, what is your thought process behind that? Why a limited number of suppliers? And why not stretching over a number of suppliers that could be, you know, if you could just unpack that. And then also, I think it was covered earlier in that, have you also looked at existing infrastructure? We seem to forget that during the, years back during apartheid days, there was existing infrastructure, rail infrastructure, for construction and building and all that kind of thing. Have we looked at what is already here? And perhaps rejuvenating that so that we can benefit as a country? Then you talk about a transaction advisor. Please talk to us a bit about that. I'm presuming that it's a panel of experts. Or am I wrong? And how would this function and so forth? Just, you know, who would be appointed? How does it all work? Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
We are going to give an opportunity to the CEO to respond, because there are really many questions. And then we will break for tea. After that, we will then give an opportunity to Honorable Suka, followed by Honorable Shofagalula.
Change to the name.
Oh.
High speed train.
Oh, high speed. Okay. And Honorable Zat. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Member. For the question, I think These are important questions that I think tell us, in fact, the both the potential and the challenge. Chair, I think that I've noted all the questions. I think let me deal with and leave the issues that the chairperson has of course touched on earlier on. But I want to assure, because the Honourable Faro, that that some of the issues we're dealing with here, particularly with regard to let me start first with the local capacity. We've got 7 companies that are working for us, that are contracted to us. One of those is Transnet Rail Engineering. They're all Transverse. They're doing a lot of work. I visited the plant, their plant in Kudus Port last week. We've got Union Carriage in Niger. We've got 3 in Cape Town, Victra. Again, another Transverse one here in Salt River. We've got a company called CTE, Comita Transport Engineering. We've got in East London, Rolling Stock Repair Services, that does this work and employ people there. We've got PNK Town, another one called Goldex. We've got one called Naledi. These companies have got enormous capacity. In fact, they are not operating at the level of capacity that we want them to be. And we've got quite a lot of plants, and I think that it is our approach that it is we need to ensure that we grow those, we develop them. Now, there are sub-suppliers to those companies. There are companies who supply, who either work on bogies, on the driver cap, on a number of components that makes the whole train, as it were. And I think that Honorable Faro agree fully with you that we've got to bring those on stream. Some of them are standing idle. But we have intervened. We've made a major intervention as PRAS. These companies, most of them, were not operational. They were only doing about 190 coaches a year. When we started with our intervention, we then said we will refurbish 700 coaches a year. And I'll tell you that in the first year, because the capacity was not at the right level, they were not able to do those numbers of coaches. We've given them time. We never applied penalties because we said our contribution is to make sure that this rail engineering industry survived. I've never applied a single penalty, even with Transnet, with the difficulties that we've experienced. We've never applied penalties precisely because we had to say in the balance that we're trying to strike. If we were to look solely on the issue of the contractual thing, we're going to lose the bigger picture, which is to revive that industry. We've put in the numbers. We've put over 7 billion rands over the past 2.5 years to enable this industry to work. Last week when I visited Transnet Rail Engineering, we find that on the locomotive side, because we also own locomotives as PRASA, that they were only they had the capacity in Kudus Port to do 60, and they had on the production line only 40, committed till March. We immediately committed an additional 20 to make the full capacity so that they can employ young people there. So this is what is happening today. I also want to report that we've agreed with Transnet that through the division Transnet Rail Engineering, that there is a plant. I think many honourable members saw in the newspapers when people were when people applied for jobs, Transnet they were falling on top of each other. People were injured because we discussed that and said that we have got a concern. There was a plant that was servicing the long distance trains there. We have taken a decision with Transnet that we revive it. And it will immediately employ about 600 workers around that. So, again, this is what we have to respond to the challenges of jobs and making sure that we support the company. I'll assure you that even the board of PRASA has taken me to task sometimes that you are very soft on these companies when they don't deliver. However, I said that, again, let's not go on a strategy that will impose a lot of penalties and destroy these companies. So we've bent backwards, as PRASA in particular, to make sure that the 7 companies are there, they do it, because we know that if we want to build completely new, we're going to have a problem. So we've asked them, our program, the refurbishment program, we've increased the numbers to also enable you to prepare for the new day, or the new Jerusalem, for those who believe in the thing. That there is a new Jerusalem coming in 3 years' time, and for you, if you want the new Jerusalem, you prepare yourself. Now, you see that you see that what many people think that I don't believe, I don't pray. Now, Honorable Faro, one of the key things that you see in the 19.5 billion for the next 3 years, it shows that we are still pumping a lot of money for those companies to be able to do the work. So we'll never abandon them. We think that they are the heart of our rail engineering industry. When I talk about the Eastern Belt, I visited manufacturing companies that manufacture all sorts of railway products, yet they are not operating at the right kind of capacity. And I think that we haven't put profit on us or in front of us. We're focused on making sure that that industry works. So we will be launching the Bloemfontein revival there, and I think that it will be part of the intervention that that we have. I'm not talking about next year. I think that we want to do it. We said that we'll do it in a month of November. Prata will confirm the numbers with Transnet, our team. So in Kudispor, we've given them 20 locomotives, and we'll put in about 6 train sets so that we get people back at work and we fix the train so that they can run. So those companies have got our support, and we've got contracts with them. Their contracts are not only about refurbishment, but also on the what is called technical support, so that we use the skills. The few engineers who remain in some of those companies, they play quite a major role in our industry. And you'll find them here in Cape Town, in Gauteng, in KZN, and in the Eastern Cape as well. The issue about the, and I was reminded by my colleague JD in the Department of Transport, that when the National Travel Survey was done, it was found that at that time, only 2 out of 10 people used trains. And they mentioned one of the major things, that trains are a bit far. They're not that accessible from them. That's what they said. And the question also moved, when they look at the numbers about who will demand, who will require rail services, it actually confirmed that 5 out of 10 people said they want to have access to rail services. So I think JD was reminding me that, in fact, what it tells you is that the demand for rail services in the urban and the rural areas is so huge, but the supply has not been able to meet all of that. And that's what this program is also aimed at, closing that gap that is there. On the income side, I've explained to Chairperson that in the last presentation, our railway operations, the passenger railways, will never make any profit. We've accepted that. But we have said that the way we are going to subsidize the railways is on our property, other than what the government subsidizes. And I think that honorable members would go to our station here. I went yesterday in the late afternoon at 5 p.m. I couldn't feel proud of a modern station that we have. I couldn't feel proud of the kind of station that many stations in the developed world do not match our station in Cape Town. It was not only the massive numbers of people who passes through that station a day. Over 160,000 people passes through that station on any given day. But it's the fact that we've transformed that station to be a truly integrated, transport integrated facility, with the stations, the buses, the taxis and everything. The number of shops of people who are doing business who are paying us, that's how you generate the money in the rail environment. And you see that our plan, I didn't go into that, but maybe it's a session that we'll deal with the committee at some other stage. What do we mean by unlocking the assets of the thing? We're talking about the land, the station, the buildings that we are sitting on, which historically have never been income generating. So railways around the world are funded. You see, you go to Hong Kong, we look at our own country. If you ask the passenger to pay the full fare, they'll never be able to afford. If you take the cost of infrastructure and the operations that you require, and you say, this is what you're going to pay for your ticket, they'll never be able to afford that. They either are reliant on two other things. So if you look at our model, it's saying we'll have government subsidy at around 50%. We'll have property generating about 30% of that. We'll have fares. People should pay only 15%, not more. Only 15% of those, and we'll get 5 from the other, whether advertisement or access. So that's our model is based on that. So for us, we'll be able to, and because we are not also going to remove the whole of Soweto and put it in Johannesburg, people in the long distances, which I think relates to the point to the point raised by Honorable Freitas. The issue is that because people live far from places of work, we're not going to put them into the cities. Your corridor approach is very important. Now, I know when we deal with the Moloto rail corridor as an example, people only look at the railway line. That is not the intention. The issue is that the Moloto rail corridor is supposed to be a stimulant that throughout that 100-kilometer line, we create a lot of economic opportunities for the people in those regions. That is the issue. Because if we focus on railway line, it means people will still be waking up too early in the morning and coming to work in Pretoria, St. Chiron and Johannesburg. Whereas the key thing was to say, let us create a belt. So the advantage about investment in rail is that it allows you to release the bulk infrastructure. It allows you to create the economic opportunities that are there. So I want to assure you that those issues we are dealing with in a very big way. Infrastructure in the issues. I just want to clarify one issue, Honorable Faro. How the infrastructure is owned and divided. Transnet does not own 100% of the rail infrastructure. You'd recall that when the South African Railway and Harbours, which was later changed to South African Transport Services SETS, was divided and restructured in 1989 to create both Transnet and the SRTC. The assets were divided between the two. All commuter rail assets are under the control of Prasa, which means metro rail travel on an infrastructure owned by Prasa. However, Shosholoza Mail travel on an infrastructure that is owned by Transnet on the long distance side. If you do a breakdown, Prasa will own about 27% of the entire rail network in the country, which is mainly in the metropolitan areas of the country. I always have a debate with Transnet and say, no, we own the most strategic network, which is in the urban metropolitan areas. But Transnet owns 70% of the, which is the long distance freight, the freight rate. And then the others is what we call the branch lines, about 46%. So that is the spread of that. So when we talk about access on the network side, it doesn't affect commuter railways in general, because that network is owned by Prasa. So for a train to move from Simonstown to Cape Town, from Soweto in Naledi to Johannesburg, from Umlazi to Durban, those tracks are owned by Prasa. The infrastructure is owned by Prasa. However, there were, other than the long distance side, there were anomalies in the separation of the assets in 1989. You do find one railway line that, for example, moves 177 trains run by Metro Rail, and in 1989 it was not allocated correctly. It was given to Transnet. Transnet doesn't run a train there at all. We run the train. You've got the train control center that in Durban, for example, that supports Metro Rail. Yet in 1989 there was a mistake that was done. And I wish to report that we had good discussions with Transnet recently, Chair, without going into the strategic issue that they raised. And we agreed that some of those issues amongst ourselves were solving. And I think that I was quite happy with the outcome. I did confirm at the investment conference that the issue about land and infrastructure is something that I know not only Prasa but the government will give so much certainty on. There will be security so that when people invest in that, we know that we won't have a problem with that. Local content, can we increase it? When I listen to the industry, it says to me that they can do 70 to 80%. My experience and Prasa's experience has been that the most they can do will be at around 65-70%, not beyond that. The industry wants to do more, but I'm fighting with the industry because sometimes we don't even get our coaches on time. So if there's so much capacity, why is there so the industry must accept, and I'm happy that when I visit some of the plants, they have increased their production capacity. They've invested in new cranes, in new machinery, so which means therefore that they are responding to the challenge of our times. But I think that they can claim one of the major things we should accept in South Africa is that yes, we've got companies that can build a body. Some of them can build the bogies and everything, but from the technology that runs the train, we've since lost it as a country, and that's what we need to buy from outside the country. How we strike that balance, I think that is going to be very, very, very crucial. Finally, on the long distance side, I agree with you that the average age of Shosholoza male fleet is 33 years. But we've also got good news here, because we'd agreed that next year we accept that Shosholoza was not performing well. The on-time performance was only 38%. It's unacceptable for any, even if people are not traveling for business, to have a 38% on-time performance. If you look at the reliability of the service, it was very bad. If you look at some of the on-board services, were not good as well. So it agreed that we need to relaunch this service next year. But what is it that we need to do, and where do we start? There are three things at the heart of the Shosholoza operations that we're trying to solve. The first one is the access to that network with Transnet. And I'll tell you that the Transnet chief executive has in fact dedicated a team to support PRASA. Recently with the Makufe Jazz Festival in Bloemfontein, a lot of people traveled. Some of the Transnet people who were dedicated traveled on that team, on those trains. We arrived in Bloemfontein well in advance, and on the train back, because people had to go back to work, it was scheduled to arrive in Johannesburg at 6. It arrived in Johannesburg at 4:30 a.m., which means that it was such a good performance. It told us, and when I look at the running speed, so the access issue with Transnet is something that I think that even before we resolve the strategic issue, we are resolving, and Transnet is working with us on that issue. I'm happy we met with them last Tuesday, where the two executives have said for the ministers as well as the chairman of the board have given us instructions. We can't afford to have two state-owned entities tearing each other in public. Go and solve it. I've had numerous meetings with the new CEO, and then it culminated into a session between our two teams, and we had agreed the issue of access is very important. And I think there are guaranteed slots. We're dealing with that. I don't think there's no. So the issue of access is very important to the turnaround on the long-distance network. And that access means prioritization of the long-distance. The problem was that we had access, but we didn't be prioritized. Meaning, therefore, that it means, therefore, the on-time performance, the predictability of the service was not good. The second issue that is key to the turnaround of Shosholoza is speed. We can't have 80, even if we don't have a high speed. We need 140, 160 kilometers on average, as average speed on some of the corridors. We had agreed with Transnet that on some of the corridors, for example, if you look at the corridor, we've identified two corridors where we want to test this principle. Pretoria, Polokwane to Musina is the first corridor that we've identified where we think that we should be running these trains, long-distance trains, at a different speed. We are currently working on that, and we hope that we'll do. And we are looking as well as the corridor between Johannesburg, Queenstown, and then where we want to open the option of Umtata. We think that there we should be running at different speeds as well. And so next year we are launching that. The third one is the locomotives. Because we know that the Honorable Faro, even if we talk about the long-distance trains, even though the passenger coaches are a problem, there's no pressure for us to buy the coaches for the long, because we can, as we've done with the premier class, for example, show that they can be actually upgraded to the right level. The key issue is the traction power, which is the locomotive. Now, Shosholoza has got 124 locomotives, and some of those additional locomotives they lease from Transnet. We know that those are not. So we are doing two options there. The one option is that we in the short term we want to lease some of those. When I say we'll come back to brief the committee, is an additional study to see how do we capitalize the locomotives primarily. It's not about. So in the short term, we have to look at the leasing option about some of those things. But more reliable, but I think the type of locals we're looking at. I just came back to look in another country, Spain, which has introduced a diesel electrical locomotive. There's part of the problem is that we change a lot along the route. We change locomotives because it doesn't fit 3 kV, and then we require 25 kV, and in some instances we have to change the diesel electrical and put the diesel, and then you find that the drivers are each trained for that particular line. So it's not an efficient system. So the three issues that we are addressing as leading up to the launch of a new Shosholoza high level service, would be access to the network speed as well as locomotives, and that's what we are addressing. The so I think those are the, all of those things are there, and I think that if you look, unfortunately I haven't switched on, but I've had two interesting responses in the short term about what we are doing, because we are not only looking at the new plan. In the short term, we're trying to address issues about availability of these trains. I've had two letters this week. The one letter comes from an old lady in Johannesburg who says, "Thank you very much for bringing back my train." Because what we've done, we've introduced a 90-day program where we sort out the issues of availability, spare trains, spare components, and we've been buying those and trying to change the terms there. We've seen the numbers of trains in the service increasing. For the first time in KZN, we are running the service with spare sets. We never had that, which means when the train is cancelled, we'll not be able to put the train. And we've seen for a period of 3 months where KZN has run the train without any cancellations of their service at all, which is a major improvement that we have. And I think that now we are launching a new service between Durban and Pietermaritzburg as part of that. So I think that we've been having short-term interventions that are there, which I think that are very crucial around that. We think that with some of the interventions we'll be able to recover. It shows, for example, that we had 472 million passenger trips in the last year that we reported on, but it also shows that we're actually running closer to realizing between 560 and 600 million passenger trips. So I think it's a major recovery in terms of the number of passenger trips. When you have the trains that are there, you are meeting your schedule, people do come. Thanks, Honorable De Freitas, for those comments. I'll go through some of those things. I think the issue about the transformation of our own employees is a very important one, because I'll tell you that I do go to stations, and then where our own employees do not treat the customers with respect. We have amongst our employees people who just do not care. But what we've seen a very interesting thing. The second letter that I got was from our Gauteng North region, where the regional operations manager was thanking his team, because we've seen that they taking it amongst themselves. We incentivize them that if we exceed our targets, the additional amount that we're going to have, we're going to share it amongst themselves. So that is an incentive to our own employees. And we find that some of our regions actually are exceeding not their monthly but their weekly targets, as it were, because they've got an incentive. They think they're part of the sharing that is there. And we've seen these people being there at stations providing customer services. I receive quite a lot of letters from people who travel both in the short and the long term and the long distance trains. Others are highly critical of us for a poor service, but I'll tell you that part of those letters we do have where people single out some of our own employees who are doing a great job. Our engineers are excited with what we're with the new program, because engineers want to have projects under their belt. They want to do something so that they advance themselves professionally. They say, "Do you see that train? I was part of building that line." Mm-hmm. Our engineers are fighting amongst themselves, say, "Who takes part?" Mm-hmm. Mr. Tsubula here works in our program management office that manages the new rolling stock program. All our engineers want to be based in that office because they say, "I want to be part of the new rolling stock program. I want to be seen to be delivering that." In the past, they never believed it. They never believed it would happen. Today, they're embracing it because they see that we're even going out on tender. So I think the issue about transforming the mindset and making people to embrace change is a very important thing that are there. They are confused, but now I understand what you're referring to. We refer to the trains you're buying as the new generation trains. But I think that you're referring to trains that were relatively new in the system. All of the eight are here in Cape Town, of the eight train sets. Well, by eight, I mean, I'm not referring to one coach. I mean to eight trains multiplied by 12. So those are the numbers of trains that were last bought in the system. They operate from Khayelitsha, Philippi, into town. Then the other part of the relatively newer trains are those that we've refurbished and upgraded from the old trains into relatively newer trains. those are spread mainly KZN, Cape Town, as well as Gauteng. That is there. But the rest of the old trains are based. So that's where we have. Why do we are not saying we're going to target two suppliers in our procurement. We are not limiting the thing. We are going to go out on a request for proposal. And we expect about 10 to 12 companies who are going to bid for this thing. These are companies who manufacture things. We are going to look at each one of them. But we are saying that when we look at what we are producing in the numbers, we can afford to have up to two manufacturers in this thing. So we are not going to exclude any companies in terms of what we have. In fact, they'll take us to court if we're to do that, because that would be illegal in the first place. The process will not be competitive, so we are following a very competitive process, but we know that these companies, the technology is advanced. One of the things you'll see that we didn't include, for example, a pre-qualification in our timetable. The reason why we don't have a pre-qualification is solely for one reason, that these companies, each one of them, have got actually the technology and the capability. On what basis will you exclude them? So let them compete on the basis of the offer that they want to, the product, as well as the technology and the innovation that they'll be bringing to the table. So they're there. I think if you look at them, about four of these companies would be in China, four you'd be in Europe, you'll have two in Japan. So there's a good spread around that. Now, how we deal with the procurement process is also going to be very important. Because are we going to, one of the major things that we'll take before we do the final market engagement is whether we're going to take out one tender at once, or we are going to separate some of the components, for example, on the like the automatic train protection. If you ask my individual view, I think that perhaps on the automatic train protection, to guarantee safety of the new trains, you issue that first before you do all other things. So it allows also for greater participation, but it also means that your safety system is quite confirmed. Existing infrastructure, we do. I think that when I talk about the three projects that we are looking at on the existing infrastructure, the people in Tshwane, in Hammanskraal, they are fighting for us to revitalize the Hammanskraal line. And I want to report that it was agreed between Prasa and Transnet last week. The line belongs to them. They'll transfer it to Prasa. We'll start to operate the system next year. We'll refurbish four of the stations, and we will have a service there, as it were. The Eastern Cape line, as I said, that we will put 100 million rand aside for the refurbishment of the line from UK, McClear, into Mthatha. That is an existing line. It's not a new line. That's what we want to do as well. So there's quite a lot of these things. And I know that in the Free State, we of course between what is it called, the area in Bloemfontein to the line, Botshabelo, we've done a feasibility study on that issue to revitalize the line. And you saw a month ago, Transnet started on the freight side to operate, and we're moving on to this. So there's quite a lot on the revitalization of the existing lines to support what we have. But I cannot say to the committee that we're going to open each and every line, because don't forget, some of these lines were uneconomical. They were built to support individual farmers. So we need to get what works for the country. So if we take a decision to open each and every line, it's not going to work, because in some of them, the volumes of whether of cargo or passengers will not justify a rail solution that we want there. The financing, and I'm going to ask later when I finish, Mr. Sebula, to add, you'll see that we looked at all the options, including financing. Both Mr. Sebula and Jan Davis, De Villiers from the department, will even talk more, because these numbers that we spoke about, Mr. De Freitas, we get them from a feasibility study that we did as PRASA together with the Department of Transport, National Treasury. We spent 20 million of that. So this is a product of, is a result of the feasibility study that we are presenting to you to today. So it's a study that we have, and we think that, of course, honorable members, did we put that on our website? No, we didn't. We don't want, of course, with our preparations for the with cabinet making certain decisions. But at the right time, of course, I think that we'll put that it will be accessible to the public so that they see what we have. It's a timing issue that is there. But you see that with the financing side, one of the issues that the feasibility looked at is the financing side, where we look at private sector financing. And you see it came out that it will actually be more expensive to finance this project privately. And I think that when you recall that when we first spoke of this program, we're looking at the financing from the private sector. But the feasibility shows that now with the interest and everything that you pay, in fact, you're going to spend more. But I'm going to ask the colleagues when I finish to add a bit onto that part. What do you mean by short term? Short term is between 12 and 36 months in our own environment. So that is why the strategy we outline is until 2014, when we say we have put the elements of a modern railway. So that is 36 months that we are working on. We have to do everything that we have to do within 36 months, not longer than that. Even the signing of the contract for the new rolling stock should happen during that period, and then the delivery will happen, of course, over a period of time that's there. The transaction advisor, when we appointed we first appointed the transaction advisor to do the feasibility study. This is the space that we are presenting today. It was out of that 20 million study. We appoint them through a competitive process. It's basically a consortium of companies that brings in technical, financial, legal, and other skills, and they basically advise us on that. Because the first team that did the work, we didn't want them to automatically get the work. We then went out to advertise again in public. Number of companies applied for them and said that this is what we're offering, this is our experience, and I think that we'll appoint. So these are the guys who will be effectively doing three things for us, the transaction advisor for this thing. The immediate thing they'll do is to help us draft the specification and the request for proposal that will issue in March in terms of the timeline. That is the first issue that is there. The second issue is that they'll be helping us in the evaluation of the different and offering us professional advice around that, and thirdly, of course, they'll help us in finalizing the contracts and the documentation around that. So that's what they'll do, and that's the role that they will play. So I think, Chair, hopefully, that didn't from the Honourable Member Faro and Honourable De Freitas, I didn't leave any of the issues that is there. But I agree fully with you, Chairperson, when you say that at this point in time, we are not going to dictate the technology upfront. I think we are planning the strategy. It is up to the companies to be innovative. And we know, for example, that what Siemens can offer you is what Bombardier can offer you. The difference between these companies is not huge. We've seen it even on the signaling side. When we appointed in Gauteng, for example, the difference between Siemens and Aptom. Aptom is a version of Alstom that used to be here in the country. What's so small on the financial side? And the technology almost the same. So it means that it's not only the technologies. What more, what extra do you do? Do you offer us to make sure that you actually get it? So I think that is the innovation, is the value add that you bring in, rather than only the technology that I think is going to play a major part on this issue. So we are doing short term issues. We are intervening around that, and we fight with the team, Honourable Faro. I'll be honest with that. The regional manager of Metro Rail in Gauteng is sitting right here. My fight with him is one. I always say to him, why don't you do your maintenance all the time at night and over the weekend? Because if you don't do that, I always see the fluctuation in the numbers of trains available. And when the trains are available, we see overcrowding, we see injuries in the system and everything. So why are you doing the short term even with the old system? And it's a system, this system is based on safety even if it's old. A railway system is a safe system. It's designed also for safety. When a train moves, the railway line is not just a straight line. It's managed in terms of sections. The signalings are there as to manage the different sections. When a train moves into a section, it closes behind it and closes in front of it to protect that train. And the only time that you have a problem is whether there is the system malfunctions or there is human error. So there are specific conditions under which you, for example, have accidents or system doesn't work, and of course your level of maintenance. So if we do our maintenance right, we sequence our strategies correctly, I think that will have short-term benefits whilst we roll out the long-term recapitalization program that we'll start to feel the benefits in 2014-2015. I'm going to quickly ask JD and Pete to add on the finance side, on the findings there, so that you could see that what is the impact and why we are looking at national filters for that.
Thanks. Yes, we did consider the private financing of the deal. The public sector comparator was actually performed on the study itself. The results were very clear in terms of the affordability of that particular line, and of course, Prasa's ability to raise any form of debt in the market. How much can we raise out there? We have to be realistic at any given time. It is clear that we'll raise very little in the market to finance this sort of a deal in that particular respect. So at the end of the day, the structural financing didn't work out. The reason why the structural finance is not working out is because of the risk transfer to the private party at this stage. What the private sector will have an appetite on to take those risks. We realize that they will not obviously take those risks. Then it doesn't make structural financing a very attractive space at this stage for for obvious reasons, because of the revenues are going to be fairly low. We're going to obviously progressively increase them over time. Earlier on we spoke about the low levels of incomes, of course, because of the market that we obviously serve at this stage. So the structural financing is obviously not going to work for us after performing such assessment. But most importantly, the deal was extremely expensive from a private sector point of view, and again, it raised issues around the affordability. Our approach was very clear, and told the Treasury about the approach to say, can we get government funding directly at this stage? And all around, there's a general agreement about that sort of approach, because it will be unrealistic to hit the market at this stage. You spoke about the economic assessment. What we did there is we did perform a first generation economic impact assessment. What then happened is that there are a couple of sources that you're going to have to use. One, obviously, is the FAB on the quarterly bulletin about the interest and inflation that goes in, and of course the BR around the investment, the rent that you put in the deal itself, what the implication is. For then that's what we are reflecting the 2.5 times. That's in every rent that you actually put in, and of course the whole status say around the different sectors around manufacturing, retail, and so forth. Those couple of sectors. So it's quite a variety of sources that we've actually used in the first generation economic impact assessment. What obviously, if you are going to allow us a bit of time, we're going to release those results in any case, and we'll see how we have arrived at the level of that. The whole change management side, we have what we call the business process operation, which is basically change management about our people, and it touches actually the heart of your customer service, maintenance personnel, the operator of these trains, and of course even the scheduler of these particular trains, because the trains are going to talk to us slightly different to what we have today. So that is actually at the heart. It doesn't matter what sort of infrastructure we lay out in the next 3 years. At the heart of it, we're going to have we're going to develop a very good strategy around the training programs in all the aspects. It's not about just maintaining the trains. It's also about when we walk into that particular station, our people, are they receptive to assist any of our customers as they come through? But at the same time, how you go about scheduling a train is not how you schedule a train today. It's slightly different. So we'll be spending a bit of time on those things to make sure that indeed, when the group CEO spoke about introducing a business from 2040, we actually mean that. It's a combination of infrastructure investment that is coupled with a huge investment around our people
in the next 3 years, which we certainly do not have actually time, but we're going to have to make sure that we fast track that particular process.
Honourable Chair, for the sake of not repeating anything that's already been said, maybe just the process that we followed is that, and I'll give a very quick reflection on that, we followed Regulation 16 of the PFMA, which is the life cycle of a project registered under the PPP. We had a steering committee which National Treasury, DPE, DTI, and ourselves, as well as the PPP unit, was represented on the steering committee. And the conclusions in terms of that process, Peter's already reflected on. So there's a very clearly steered process of participation of all the national departments coming to the conclusion, which Peter has indicated. And then maybe lastly, the minister will be releasing this feasibility study to cabinet on the 3rd, which is Wednesday.
Thanks. Let me just in summary say that, of course, what it means is that if you don't borrow on the strength of your balance sheet against your assets, when you have to transfer those risks to the private sector, the risk, the premium gets too high. Coupled with, of course, the shares at the beginning, the interest at the beginning, I think that is a major thing. Finally, I've introduced the regional manager, Mr. Lindelwa, as the regional manager of Gauteng. I made a mistake. He's the regional manager of Metro Rail here in the Cape, of Cape Metro Rail. So when the trains are not working, he's the man to attack. When there are new projects like the stations to be launched, you are the man to be to talk to.
I have seen that people were longing for tea. Can we grab tea and come back, because we only left with 45 minutes and I have already identified that there were 3 hands up. Can we do that?
Anonymous.
Wahlala ngathi ulahlekile ntombazana.
Okay.
Bengimxelele uMahlalela last week ukuthi a ngiyambalekela akandisizanga nix. Ayaya. Cold inside here when you're from outside.
Yeah,
I will have to download it on the system now, or maybe I can check it because it can't be emailed.
Okay. I'll give her a stick and I'll get it to the as with you.
Yeah, too many pictures. So my girl is so fine.
Everything is okay.
Yeah.
But I like it. It's exactly like the chairperson. They talk both of them.
So we're gonna be we were going to use another venue. To be honest, I got another venue.
Okay.
But then they said you have to be out by 12:30, so I thought so I had to say no.
You've got a small piece of paper there, Manny.
Hey, yes,
can you tear one off?
Is there a box there?
Oh, okay.
No, Makaya, it's not fishing.
Why not?
She's just drinking.
She's fasting. No, Makaya.
Once I empty, I pull out.
This is a lot of wrong things in here.
Wrong thing.
Seems like I'm not going on or saying.
Okay.
So she decided to fast.
Oh. Okay.
And you fast and pray?
Mm. Very good.
I'm doing one.
Yeah.
I'm doing one.
Yeah.
Hey!
Yeah, I hear you on diet.
Lucky. From Vexion Advisor. Anything you didn't ask? From Vexion Advisor. Oh, you're fine. Okay, that's what you're talking about.
I have to go to Funa. Forgive us, Funa.
Thank you, Sir Person, and to the CEO. I must also commend your presentation. Quite bold, the bold plan. You did not use your words in presenting it. I was listening to you very carefully and attentively. I think I will take a leaf from one great icon said, you give us your plan. But what is expected is to walk your plan. And if you talk of walking your plan, I will urge that PRASA and the department surely will have to implement that plan with speed. We embrace the three-year plan. We don't have qualms with that. But I think it's like we are like, I'm like Kosato, the question of speed in the implementation so that our people can see the change, that it is real change, not talking. I'll urge that. Maybe the second matter for me it would be to monitor, to do my oversight role much closer, so that from time to time, Chairperson, even if it's on 6 monthly or half a year monthly, to bring them to account, to say, based on your plan, your roadmap, how far have you implemented that? So that if there are red flags that are going to be raised, they are raised on time, so that we don't find them at the end of the day. That will also give us a chance to talk to our department, to your principals, and also to monitor the question of budget, the spending patterns in the budget, to be voted into this department and then also into this entity, so that really they work their plan. The other point, Chairperson, you must elevate, or you must market this plan so that you bring hope to people. Especially, I like the approach of your phase in approach, phase one, phase two, and so on. But surely you must talk how to wish that even those communities, you use their community radio stations and everybody else, just to give them that there is hope that you are bringing to our people. As fuel is rising, I'm not sure whether it's the strategy of government to say fuel is rising, we are trying to lessen, slowing down buying of private cars so that you shift or push us towards this public transport. And as such, so that we are putting more pressure to yourselves to do the honorable things to deliver. That's my huge appeal, Chairperson. Then I know cabinet is cabinet to give approval, but surely come closer also to the interdepartmental, your sister departments, to come to the party so that they don't lag behind whilst you are moving very fast with your speed. washosholoza ufast nomfuza ngokuvula ke nibe ngathi ngula fast train athetha ngayo ka-160 kilometers per hour. That's my fundamental one, and the issue of marketing talking. The plans must be known by the country. They should not be known in bottles. They should be known by the country. So that now the CEOs do not emakaya. I call this a no CEO wakaprasa. Now this is anayo. Even if you make pamphlets for us, so that we deliver them in our constituent offices, so that especially on deliverables, deliver issues, Mr. Pager, you see to say here in this province we'll be doing this from this time around, so that monitoring also when you go to your own areas, even to the workers whom you can meet at times, they can say, on the assembly, I'm going to this direction. So in a way you give security to the workers also themselves to say there's a plan that is looking forward in this direction. Thank you, Sir Kassim.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I told DG last week that I'm no longer Shobakalula. I can't be named after something that is not working. I haven't seen a single bicycle in my area, so I've changed my name. CEO, we call you Lucky Sekhoni Powers, so Chakrana, this is trying to lucky. Just a comment, Chairperson, about PRASA, how I know PRASA. In 2009, I think, we were taking the readiness of trains and what for 2010. I don't know where we were in Joburg, or I don't know. But PRASA came in to present to the portfolio committee where we were, not here in Cape Town. And it was late in the evening. We were from
Airport
Holiday Inn. We're very tired, so it's not a funny myth, but Chairperson insisted that we must listen to these people. And compare this presentation here today and nano presentation like, what do I to Chairperson? No. Go back. This is not what we called you for. You had to go back, but the following morning she said to me, no. And I said, why did you call those people? Because I didn't even know what they were saying. Said, no. Those people, yes, my husband, my husband, they are coming up with it. It's just that my present hangar. Yes, when I compare that time and this time, I don't know, they say you were CEO even then. I'm sure we knew one. Well, but I'm saying, you are going. Let us turn to page 12. Chairperson, let me just go in here, and say, this picture reminds me when I was staying in Ikwezi. The station was Ikwezi, and I was working in town. These are the trains that were from Naledi. They arrived in Ikwezi every single day, Zinzi, with the jacket flowing, moya, and we were supposed to ride in the trains, or on the trains, I don't know. What usually happened was they get off and we go in, and they come in again. But what I'm trying to say is, after this, because we usually arrive in park stations with one shoe, not having a beret, or the buttons were broken, but you push yourself in, it was full. Then I decided that no more trains. But now, they don't need to market themselves. I can easily, now I feel I will easily go back to a train because they are modernized.
Mm.
They don't have to go for a market and market for passengers. We will go there willingly. We needn't be marketed. We are willing to go back to trains because now it's modern technology. I'm sorry to use this technology because like and Chairperson, but technology. But we'll go back now willing. You don't need to market. Like a page this is, let's see what page 27 has for me. Page 27, I think you will know only number of jobs. 27, yes. Total employment created, number of jobs, 61,000. If you look at those jobs still going to be created, or already they have been created and people, 61,000 people are working. Page 5, like you have a tendency of present you page 5. Then one gets a question, page 6, you are answering that question when I'm going. So, it's making again. Page 5, we know OT elements of modern railways from 2014 and 15. This is what's going to happen. By 2014, this is what we are on. But my problem was, we are in 2011 now. 2013, 2014, it's not even 2 years, it's a year. Do you think it's going to work within a year? Maybe you've already started, but I think that was more appealing, it's too soon. But if it is going to happen in 2014, really, congratulations. So that's the clarity of. Are you sure this is going to work in 2014 and we are in 2012 now? Thank you.
Oh, one thing, sorry.
Like I forgot to say, you owe the captain a trip to premium train to Johannesburg. Thank you.
Free trip. Yeah, free trip. Premium trip, yeah. Sasikhwelanga lamatikiti ethu. Sayikhwela. This one is free.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Lucky, for your nice presentation. It was very, very nice to me. More especially, you made mention of East London. Eastern Cape, not KZN, so Gauteng and Cape Town this time. So I am very, very happy today. Secondly, I'm not going to be long. I'm not going to repeat what my colleagues have been saying here. The only thing that I like from this is when Honorable Suka was talking about marketing plan, I like marketing plan part because it will take this department to the highest level. Mangele reminds me when she talked about page 12, when I looked at this train, here I was also very young by then, Mangele. When I saw other lady, when she stepped down here in Down Station, we used to say Down Station before this station in Cape Town. As the Cape Town, we know, as Johannesburg, we know that it's Park Station. Yeah, this lady was dirty. I'm not going to unpack.
Yeah, I know. What was happening.
You know what was happening before. The lady was dirty. And then we had to borrow her a jersey to put it over to cover herself. You know most the stories of the trains when they are full. Everything used to happen by then. So I don't know now. No, I said all you have presented here was wonderful to me. So my colleagues have covered me, thank you, with other issues.
I want to simplify what Honorable Mtaga is saying without going into detail. when we talk of social problems, being addressed, we do not necessarily refer to social problems only at home, where we stay, to say how the social life would improve. But we're also referring to social problems that happen in the plane, in the train. In trains, when the trains are full, and there are women standing and men standing, women become victims in the train. And it becomes a very embarrassing situation because you can't even scream because there are lots of people. You only get out of the train when you are dirty like that. You have been sexually abused in full view of other people, and you couldn't say anything because you don't know how many of the people are with the one who is sexually abusing you. So she's referring to that. When we say we need to improve transport, we are referring to those things that sometimes cannot be understood by people who have not experienced or witnessed that. Some people have become paralyzed because they were thrown out of trains that are moving. But I'm glad because in one of the transport months, I think it was 2009, we were launching a train that has got a police station inside the train where you can report, yes. Which then means the person understands the kind of problems that happen in the train. I think that I just have one question, like, it's around, okay, let me put it that way. Countries at international relations level support one another in terms of scholarship. And in our situation, we know that there is a scholarship, there is money that relates to skills development in South Africa, which was blessed by the government of the People's Republic of China. When we were there in 2010, we were made aware of the fact that we had underutilized that money. They had placed about 200 million and we had only used 30 million. The question that then that I'm asking is to do you foresee any skill shortage that require skill shortage that are related to railway transportation that would then require South Africa to take advantage of such opportunities. But even besides that, the model of China was also based on two things. First one, they took a decision of developing their own skills. And they sent people to strategic countries. Some were sent to Germany, others were sent to France and Japan, because those three countries were leading on the railway transportation in terms of skills. So those were people that were focusing on engineering for purposes of coming back and be deployed as the workforce engineers that are leading now the project in the country. But also there was another set of people, the academics, who were sent again to countries that were doing well for purposes now of coming back to establish education institutes that were then going to continuously undertake research and develop technology. Because I want us to move from this situation that we will buy technology from other countries. I want us to look at a situation where we will develop our own technology and then say, if this is the model, what plan then do we put in place for skills development? Not just the individuals that will be sent to learn, but for skills development to build our own capacity inside the country for development of skills of the future generation. And I'm asking that because we went, this trip that I was part of, was a delegation that was led by the Deputy Speaker. And the purpose of that visit was to try and find an implementation plan so that MOUs that are signed between countries then become practical, they yield results. We don't end by having our MOUs that are good, and then you find that other people take those MOUs seriously and put down resources, and then on our side, we underutilize those resources. And that is not only going to be happening with China, it's going to happen with all the countries that we have got MOUs with for Parliament to find a way of providing an oversight on a particular department that had to act now. Question this in a simple manner. Do you foresee skills shortage and how then would you suggest the coordination happen so that we don't lose? Or even if we are not perceived as people that don't move fast enough to utilize skill development related assistance.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I think the good news is that we are, I'm in fact traveling to China to precisely follow up on that issue. I think next weekend. I think that the agreement signed between China and South Africa, I think that it was signed last year, That agreement was from government to government, of course, signed by Honorable Minister. It provided quite a lot of opportunities. During that visit, I happened to have an opportunity to visit some of the facilities in China. One of those was how they managed to close the gap, particularly on the high-speed technology, and they had control over that. And as you correctly mentioned, sir, they identified some of their own engineers. I happened to sit with those engineers whose task was very simple. We want to develop our own capacity. I'm not just going to land there. Now, today, they can manage. When I visited China 10 years ago, I traveled on a Shosholoza mail type train from Beijing to Shanghai. It was an overnight train. Today, you do it in 4 hours. That's the kind of revolution that is taking place there. When I was there, there was only cranes. Today, they've transformed, and I think they've moved with lightning speed around that. And I agree with you, Chair, that if you look at the number of engineers in the rail sector in China, both on the manufacturing side as well as on the operational side, it's mind-boggling. So on average, it means therefore that if you look at how many engineers they have per train. We do not have that. The shortage we are already experiencing even with the current system, where to bring in some of the old people to try and manage that. One of those, of course, is that one of the major things that they've got dedicated universities who are dealing with issues of railways. We are, as South Africa, have allowed the situation, and I think it's an international trend now, where people also do no longer have dedicated universities who are training railway experts. It's one of the major shortcomings that we have. Historically, we've had the SLN Park, which is part of Transnet. It used to be one major issue. Chair, I'll be honest that we've allowed SLN Park at the time when we talk about skill shortages to deteriorate when it should be. We are running smaller schools within Metro Rail, in the different Metro Rail region, where we train our own people. Mainly some of the, when the engineers qualify at the more generic level at universities, they'll come into their own environment because they need 18 months where we train them, even if they've got the qualification, for them to become railway engineers, not just engineers in general. We train also some of our artisans directly into the schools, and we of course train the drivers. Now with the drivers, we bought two machines have now been delivered. We're getting an additional two, what you call the simulators, where we train the drivers under the simulator conditions. Those we have set behind Park Station, it is working there. So our drivers are no longer trained only in terms of route knowledge and everything. They sit there that under different conditions, whether the weather is bad, like they're trained like pilots. And we've created the, what you call, a small learning academy for that purpose. But I think that when we want to achieve what we're trying to achieve with this plan, we'll have to move beyond that. And for me, it will entail three levels. The schools that we have should be at the beginning of that process. Now, when I spoke to one of the railway engineers on the signaling side, he said, well, part of the problem, we're doing things wrong because we're taking people from universities and bringing them into that. He said, no. All railway companies that have succeeded in the skills and produced railway engineers, they get the guys from high school. They then tell them, we're going to give you a bursary into that thing, but for the next 2 to 3 years, you work here. We do it the other way around. So we get engineers who are qualified recently, but who can solve the problems in our railways. Whereas if you take them from school, you bring them into the rail environment, and you take them to universities. I think that's an important thing. So I think that we need to review the way we do it, because it's so we've got highly qualified people, but we've got people who are not experienced to do this thing. The second issue is that on the artisan level, because when a trainer's got a problem, it's not an engineer who goes, it's an artisan who goes or a technician who goes. We've seen that the skills there are quite low. My visit to Spain suggests that your artisans are very important. One of those things about the train is on the welding side. Welding, when you deal with steel or aluminium, is very crucial. Mm. And we are running short of the artisans. We know a lot in the township of artisans, of welders, but most of them aren't necessarily qualified. And that could be an opportunity when we talk about empowerment and mobilize those welders into a massive program that is there. The drivers, we know that currently we are short of experienced drivers. We have to bring back some of the old experienced drivers as the trainers to the young guys. Because in the past, if you look at the drivers, they used to train differently. They wouldn't start with driving a train within a short space of time. They would go into a yard. They'll be involved in yard operations, shunting trains where there are no people involved. After a couple of years, go there. The same with pilots. They're trained like that. You start with small aircraft locally before you're even going to fly the long haul off. After yesterday, I was flying when I was coming here, Chairperson, with a pilot who was sitting next to me. He just came from abroad. He told me, and I remember that very well, precisely because he told me, he says, I've got 14 years of experience flying internationally. But why I remember him, because he said this morning, he's traveling with his family. He's from Port Elizabeth. From Somerset West. They were traveling from Cape Town to Johannesburg on the premier class. And he says, among pilots, premier class has become one of our most favorite things when we take a break from the airline, because we fly so much that we don't want to be on the air. Mm-hmm. When we travel with our kids, we travel on the ground. And he said to me, "No, you're premier class." He didn't know that I'm involved with Plaza. So as we speak, this pilot is traveling with his kids and his family from Cape Town to Johannesburg. But he said when it broke down that 14 years, so you have the hours under your belt, experience that you've flown before you even move to the higher level. Because of the pleasures that you've had, you find that a lot of people have come through the system even without having gone through yard operations first, gaining the years, and so we're trying to rebalance that. So in a nutshell, what I would say, Chairperson, is that I think that on the research and development, where we have our own people researching on this railway technology, Prasa and Transnet, as railway authorities in the country, should actually be required to invest into that kind of a thing. How do they do it? They need to fund what you call a school within a university or technicon to be dedicated to that. We are not doing it. We're not good doing it quite a lot. We're not putting in money. Currently, we've got a relationship with two universities. University of Stellenbosch is doing quite a lot on the maintenance, research on the maintenance methods. They've got the School of Engineering that does a lot of that. And we've got some of our own people. Our head of engineering is now completed his PhD, did it there, looking at the metro rail maintenance methods that are there. So I think that we've got that, but we need research and development, and we need the relationship. But internally, we do need, because what we need internally are technical schools, and we are not doing enough of that. Chairperson, recently we put in about 300 of our own employees, and the minister did officiate their graduation. These are our own employees in customer services who deal with the customer. We've designed a program that is funded by a different sector, not the transport sector, the service sector. They graduated last month, trained in different things related to their work. I think that the Honorable De Freitas raised that issue. But in the context of training, that's what happened. These are own people who at the station level have been trained and put through this program. So I'm going to take, I think we're going to take advantage of the Chinese issue that is there. That is why part of the reason I'm trying to engage with them for to see how they've even invited, because the Chinese are not even looking at some of the soft skills. They're looking at the real skills that they have. The engineer who briefed me there, he says, I'm the one who was sent to spend time in Germany with Siemens and Bombardier. I spent 4 years there learning how they run the technology. And today I'm among hundreds of engineers in China who are not just can maintain the train, but who knows how it works out, how it works, and they design their own things. And when I visited, I can't recall the name of the place, 120 kilometers outside of Beijing, that's where the high-speed train was being built. So it's amazing what the Chinese are doing there. And we could meet with the workers. It was an amazing environment. The factory layout itself was a modern layout,
It's not, I'm not sure, Chair, if you visited also that very plant. You see that the level of cleanliness there, the facilities for
managed
workers,
by the woman.
It's managed by the woman indeed. Mm. And they did say that women can manage this kind of thing much better than men. That was the point that was being made. And indeed, we find this, it was a modern facility that is there. So, Chair, I agree fully with that. We'll explore that, but I can confirm now that we do have a major shortage, and we don't have the people who are going to run the new railways in this country. We don't have them, unfortunately. But the 3 years allows us to actually put some of those programs, some of those people, into this. Hence, through our visit to China as well as Spain, to try and then get that on the table as quickly as possible. So just quickly to answer one or two other questions. The short-term jobs that we are creating this year, Mamangele, is 5,000. This is separate from the 65,000.
Oh, okay.
This comes from the infrastructure program that we have. We other than the 5,000, we had agreed that we needed to sort to improve on the platform side, and that we needed the public works program to do platforms. And we think that will be a separate even. But when we are asked to see how many jobs are you going to create other than your employees, Prasa employs 15,000 people, but there are 5,000 jobs that we'll create. The 65,000 would be related to the infrastructure, to the new rolling stock program strictly. So they haven't started kicking in there all in all. So these are the short-term jobs that we've committed to create from the rollout of the infrastructure as it is. Now, Eastern Cape, I think that there's no doubt that when you talk about the development of the province, actually not only to even the major centers, the movement of people within the Eastern Cape is a major issue. And I think that we've been perhaps too bookish in the way we've dealt with some of those issues. Some of the trains in the Eastern Cape, we need to combine, as it's been done in many countries, combine freight and passenger trains in provide that frequency. These things are going to have freight, and because then they can cross-subsidize. So the divide between Transnet and Prasa is where actually for a province like the Eastern Cape will not work. Because that's where you should actually be cross-subsidizing each other as it were. But for me, for example, if you connect in a more dynamic way, Umtata cutting through the number of villages with East London, because that movement there should be. I always travel in the Eastern Cape when I drive, and you see people carrying nodes there with where they are going to. It actually shows that we don't have frequent public transport for the rural masses in the country, and it's something that we ought to write. And I think our regional manager in East London has been given a mandate that we expand our network, because both Eastern Cape, KZN in the north, as well as Limpopo, provides us an opportunity to connect the rail system much better and enable people to access opportunities. And we've identified quite a number of this. The facility we have, for example, in East London, where trains are being fixed, it's run by Victra, but the company is called Rolling Stock Repair Services. The last time I went there, I find that they were only employing about 120 people there. But every time they deliver their coaches, they're the only company that will complete its delivery of coaches well in time. Now, if you look at the level of unemployment in places like King Williamstown and you go further, it actually tells you that you can do more. Now, I hear about Port Elizabeth, because Port Elizabeth is sitting on a 1.2 billion rand project with a Motherwell project. That project, we've done the feasibility, we've been working on it, is now ready to come on stream. But how we connect the Eastern Cape is something that even the province has expressed an interest on. There are costs that are involved with some of those, but the infrastructure, the advantage with the infrastructure is there. It's not only the new infrastructure we've got to build. And if we do it, we're creative enough, we can get frequent services. I'll tell you, I'll be honest, that the current Kai Rail can never be the kind of solution that we want. Because that's where I think that we have the possibility, we spend money as government, But Kai Rail, as it stands right now, it owes a lot of money to both Prasa and Transnet, because the model that was built is not one that we know that will be sustainable, but also because it's using a completely different route that doesn't enable it to move it with speed and all of those things. So we have a plan, and I think that particularly for the honorable members in this committee who come from the Eastern Cape, when we visit there on some of the plans, we'll invite the honorable members so that we share with you, and you also advise about what are some of the connections. But we've made the decisions. We must invest there. Finally, on the rural side, of course, Limpopo once has identified about, they've asked us to do a study for them. We did. It showed that out of all about 14 corridors they've identified, only 4 were viable. But when we look at the numbers, it was interesting, because the numbers on those corridors in the rural areas were far higher than some of the corridors you find in the urban areas. And it's something we take for granted, because we think the numbers are in the cities. Mm-hmm. Whereas some of the rural corridors, they are far higher in demand than, you've got corridors that have got 40, 60,000 people going one way in Limpopo. Yet the level of investment on that kind of transport is not there. So I think that one of the major things we'll do is that, because I think coming out, the message from honorable members has been saying that you move with speed, but we want to see what you're also doing now, leading up to that 2014. So I think that we'll have, when we go to the different regions, to say, honorable members in that region, perhaps if the committee is not able to join all of us, say, we liars, let's even go together in some of those projects to see, for example, are the things that we're talking about happening? Because Mangele, when we go back to 2009, at that time we were told that Prasa will not be ready for 2010. Mm. And people said, is what we are saying realistic? Can it be done? And I can, by the time we reach May 2010, all our stations were ready. All 2,000 of our coaches that we've put for the refurbishment were completed. All the 10 stations where we had to put in speed gates, we put them. And that is why we could perform the manner that we did for 2010. I'm confident that we've got a young team, is really energetic, and is not allowing bureaucracy to stand on its way. They've got such a focus on making sure that 2014 we achieve this. And I must say, Chairperson, that when you look on the infrastructure side, we're not talking about projects that we're still planning. Some of the projects are already underway, like on the signaling side. Is a project that is underway. On the speed gate, we know that after we put the speed gate throughout all the system, we'll be able to introduce an electronic ticketing solution. And these are projects that we are implementing. So I'm confident that this is achievable. I think that is a realistic plan, but it will require the level of dedication from the team, that we don't take our eyes off the ball. We know that we've promised the country that 2014 will deliver a modern system that facilitates greater access, because that's the most important thing, facilitate greater access to all South Africans. And I think that's what the Chairperson, we want to leave and commit ourselves that for me, we've got 4 CEOs in our business. All 4 of these CEOs, they run the operations. They've released me to focus on this modernization thing so that we can have that happen. So my single job, and I think we welcome also the opportunity that on a quarterly basis we give a report to the committee. Mm. Are we making progress? But invite the committee to come and visit some of the facilities, like the infrastructure projects. I said on the signaling, we opened the Midway Lens projects. Honorable Faro raised the issue whether we are supporting the companies that are there. I want the committee to come and visit with us. For example, go to Union Carriage and thing, and see that it's our locomotives and coaches that are sustaining some of the jobs in these companies. And so that the impact is not only about the 5,000 people, 15,000 people we employ, but it's the industry that is so much dependent on Prasa and Transnet. And I think that's where we've got a lot of power. But we look forward, Chair, to next week, where we look at some of the socio-economic benefits and work on that basis. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to thank honorable members for their contribution and comments, as well as the plan presented to us by Prasa. It was a very the business strategy plan. It speaks to all the issues I was trying to look at. What issue can I raise and just train you a little bit? And I couldn't find one except just an advice on the skills, because that one is an opportunity. There is Professor Wang at the Sonex University.
CUT.
Yes. He's very passionate about that. So is the ambassador. Our own ambassador, that's right, to try and get us more. Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Lucky. Sangha. Mamela, you can come up home and then the bullet can go in the plant. You want it now? Oh, but you must try to learn faster.
You like in the train?
Okay. I was talking about today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.